Looking to pull off the classic Penner look this fall? How about a fedora from Amazon.com? Get the best prices on everything you need, including the countdown to Black Friday deals when you start your shopping at robhasawebsite.com/Amazon. Coming to you live from my apartment, it's Rob Has a Podcast. And now, here's the guy who just finished off a whole reality sandwich, Rob Cisternino. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Rob Has a Podcast. I am Rob Cisternino, and we have got another great show. I'm feeling like we're on a real roll here, moving along, covering episode number 8. Of Survivor, Blood versus Water. While it's, some sad news that my friend Otis is out here on Survivor, Blood versus Water, we have got a great show to cover it all. We have the return of Jonathan Penner for the fourth time to recap an episode, plus his Survivor exit interview. That was actually fifth time, but we're throwing that out. It's Penner is back, Penner Cast 4, baby. We're going to talk with Penner here in just a little bit. And then we're going to talk about everything going on in the episode and take your voicemails with one of the bloggers from robhasawebsite.com. Sarah Freeman will join us here talking with you guys here on a jam-packed Survivor Thursday. Kicked off the morning talking with not one, but two of the great Survivor spouses, John Cody and Laura Boneham, joined me on the Exit Interview podcast this morning. Had a good talk with both of them. And then last night, we did a late night West Coast edition of Survivor Know-It-Alls. And Stephen Fishback and I went into all of the finer points from the episode. So always a fun discussion with Stephen every week on Survivor Know-It-Alls. So if you missed any of these podcasts, don't do that. All you have to do is subscribe to Rob Has a Podcast. Go to robhasawebsite.com/iTunes to subscribe to the podcast. Full feed in iTunes. You'll get all of the shows that we do. And if you only want to hear the Survivor feed, you can go to robhasawebsite.com/Survivor Podcast. And hey, while you're there, if you want to leave us some feedback or give us a 5-star rating, if you think we deserve it, that's cool too. Nobody's going to complain if you do that, especially not me. And thank you guys very much for those of you guys who are leaving us comments and feedback on iTunes. So we have a big election going on right now. It's the Podcast Awards voting. About a week to go here, coming down the stretch on the Podcast Awards. Rob Has a Podcast, of course, you know, is nominated for the Best Produced Podcast of the Year and Best Video Podcast of the Year. We appreciate your daily votes through November 15th at podcastawards.com. A Survivor Roast is what you're playing for. Worth playing for? I hope so. So if you want to see the Survivor Roast, we always appreciate you casting your votes. Or if you just want to see us win a podcast award, that is actually very nice of you. So let's see. Anything else before we jump into... Oh, yes. We started a... Courtesy of Kurt Clark, who joined us recently on the podcast, we're going to start doing a poll every week on the show. On the Survivor Know-It-Alls, I'll give you guys a poll question. And then between Wednesday and Thursday, you guys are going to vote on it. And so... interesting results last night. So I asked the question, and I want to make sure I have the wording of the question right. Let me go to robhasawebsite.com/poll, and here's what the question was. It was, does Vetus go home next, was the poll question I asked. And 139 people voted, 139 listeners voted, and the answer was 34.5% of you said yes, but a majority, 65.5% of you said no. So the Rob Has a Podcast audience has spoken. So we'll try to come up with some more creative poll questions going forward, but that was just the first one. So you guys are saying Vetus sticks around, so we'll see what happens next week. All right, everybody, we have a very special treat for you guys today. I know everybody loves it when we get this guy on the podcast, and I believe this is actually the fourth time we're doing this to talk about an episode of Survivor. Here he is, the three-time... great spokesman of Survivor. Here he is, Mr. Jonathan Penner.
The crowd roars. It's Penner. Hello.
Penner, how are you?
I'm I'm fantastically well. Thank you for asking. How are you? You're a new father. Little Dominic is out there getting lifted and loved. How is that for you?
Yes. Hopefully not getting lifted like some of these rap guys mean it. But yeah, just
shoplifted. No, I hope not. I'm knocking on wood. No, you earlier had told me that you're lifting him. In lieu of going to the gym, you're lifting your son as exercise.
Yes, yes. At one point, yeah, I was trying to make a concerted effort to stay in shape, you know, in case my marriage goes south or whatever reason. But as of right now, the fitness plan has gone out the window.
Yeah, having a kid, the fitness plan often goes out the window. You eat poorly. You don't go to the gym nearly as much because you want to be there with your kid. And luckily, it brings you hopefully closer together with your wife. So as you get to be more of a overweight, slobby kind of guy, she doesn't care because you guys are closer and more in love than ever before. I wish you only the best with the baby.
So you say more in love than ever before. I'm going to write that down. That seems
Tell her I said so.
Okay, because that's it. That's interesting. All right. So
okay, that's for another podcast.
Yeah, I think the lack of sleep, I think it's tough. I think it's a test.
You'll get that back.
All right, well, let's get into this because we got a very fun season to talk about here. And now we had sort of this big shakeup last night with Otis being the one to go home here after the merge. And it's always very exciting. You know, you've been involved in a couple of interesting post-merge scenarios, most notably your most recent time out there on Survivor Philippines. So I feel like we'll have a lot of ground to cover today.
Well, you know, it's funny you mentioned that. I was actually thinking a similar thing about who is it going to be? How are these two sides going to come together? There's so many relationships in the past, whether it's familial relationships, the initial setup of the teams, then the shakeup of the teams, and now they bring them together. How is it going to go down? And I don't think anyone honestly was surprised that it turned out to be ours. You know, I think the question of whether Laura and what's her name?
Sierra
are going to hop ship, whether Tina and Katie are going to work with Vetus, how the five against five is going to line up in the next 3 days episode is what's the most interesting to me, because that really will determine the end game to a certain degree, don't you think?
A lot of layers here, a lot of things to figure out. So thinking about this episode last night, you know, we saw Tyson for the last couple of weeks has been talking about, hey, I got to get rid of Otis. You know, he wants to get back together with his brother. I got to take him out. And comparing this to Survivor Philippines, do you see any similarity to the way that Tyson was targeting Otis, to the way that Jeff Kent felt like, hey, I've got to get rid of Penner? And even though you were aligned with him that, hey, this is a guy, if he gets far enough in the game, I'm not going to be able to take him out?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I think that's probably true. The problem with the show is versus the actual game when you're out there, it's edited towards the vote, right? And so what's really going on, what Aris really thought was happening out there, we'll never know, or maybe you know, because, you know, or you can get a chance to talk to him and ask. How much Tyson was really targeting him, obviously he had him in his sights and he realized he had to get rid of him sooner or later, but I really think it's because of how he saw the lineup on the beach going. If he didn't get rid of him now, the chances of things getting weighed, Aris thought he had seven people going his way, you know, and it's too many, but there were seven people who went against him. I guess that's similar to what happened to me, but it's still too many. You know, he got blown out and didn't find the idol, all that. You know, this is where the idol burning crap comes back to bite people in the butt. Why they never found that other idol is terrible, you know, I think. Ridiculous. Was Tyson targeting him the whole way and finally found a time to do it? I guess so. If he didn't do it now and Aris was able to put together what he thought he was putting together, it would have been Tyson soon.
So you bring up an interesting point with the idol clue and burning the idol, or burning the clue to the idol. in Survivor Philippines, you did put a target on your back by looking for the idol, but then ultimately you ended up having it. So do you think that the risk or the reward outweighed the risk with some of these people, and that they should not have just taken the clue and thrown it in the fire?
Well, I think so, because, you know, I'm the guy who went and hustled and found it, and it paid off. I mean, I don't believe, honestly, that Jeff Kent or whoever was targeting me, and not very effectively because we voted off two people before we got to the merge, and they weren't me. You know what I mean?
Right.
But whatever degree that we looking for the idol put a target on my back, I think it was outweighed by the rest of the time in camp and what I was able to do with the idol once I found it. I mean, that's the point. The idol is very, very powerful as a tool in many, many ways. And yeah, okay, so you're after the idol. You're not here with the team. Nobody freaking really believes that the alliances that are set up are set in bronze or something, you know. And I always urged everybody on my tribe, look for the freaking idol. Are you guys crazy? It's incredibly powerful. What, you know, I am looking for it. You're damn straight I am, and I expect you guys to be too. This is Survivor. What are we talking about here? And maybe that didn't make it onto the show, but I always told them that I was looking for the idol, and I urged them to do the same thing. They were too afraid to be, or something. I really don't know. Maybe they didn't want to get wet, you know. But I think having the idol to bring people together behind you, or to work with you, or to protect you when you need protection, is much more valuable than, no, I'm going to be noble and not search for the idol that everyone else could be searching for. Now, Tyson did it masterfully. Somehow he was able to get that information and hold on to it long enough. Who knows when he really found it? I mean, I assume the editing was pretty straightforward, and it happened in the timeline, you know, when it actually happened. But he must have waited that long until he felt he was safe to go and do it, because he basically, you know, went straight to the tree, looked around, and found it. That's how they showed it, right?
Yeah.
I mean, what do you think? Do you think that the idol is more trouble than it's worth?
See, in this instance, it almost became like so toxic from everything that happened with Brad Culpepper and voting out your good friend Candace's lovely spouse, John, earlier in the season, that it sort of just became everybody then was just like a lemming. And now if you didn't put it in the idol, it's like, hey, well, you know, what the heck's with Rob? Why didn't he put the idol in the fire? He must be, you know, he has something up his sleeve. And I think it'll be interesting in the post-merge game when people really start to have a target on their back where it's like, hey, I know I'm the next person to go. Give me the idol. I need it. I think that'll be interesting to follow. But I think it would have been interesting if somebody thought about things a different way and would have played it differently.
Yeah, or read the idol aloud, you know. Okay, tribe, you know, gather round. I mean, that's the thing. You say to your tribe, okay, guys, come here, let's go. And you read it aloud right then and there, you know.
So is that what you would have done? You would have taken it back to camp?
I don't know exactly what I would have done. I haven't really spent much time thinking about it. But I do think that there's other things to do besides, you know, burn it, just go burn it. There's ways to play this that are inclusive and not just, okay, I'm going to be a lemming and I'm not going to have that information. You know, I would read it aloud and read the wrong thing. I don't know. You make it up as you're reading it and then throw it in the fire and tell people the wrong information. You know, there's 100 different, and this is me spitballing here, but believe me, if I was sitting out on the beach wondering what the hell I was going to do if somebody presented me with the idol, I would then come up with a plan and share it with my team so that we all would do the same thing.
I mean, even Abby Maria came up with a creative idea when she was reading the clue that she got at the auction from Survivor Philippines.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Just enough to throw some smoke in the air, you know, just enough to buy yourself some more time. Now, either these folks are operating out of fear. I'm afraid if I do anything other than what everyone has done, I'm going to be targeted, which is interesting to me that they all either so open or so frightened one way or the other, you know, or I don't know, people just don't have imaginations. It's very strange to me. I every time it happened, I'm like, is that the best you guys can do? Come on. I'd like to think that there's other ways to use those clues than the way that they did.
Yeah. Well, I think that's what's fun about you as a Survivor player and probably as a person. You're not very afraid. You're not afraid to speak your mind and not afraid to try something.
Yeah, you know, maybe you're saying that that's a dangerous thing. I mean, a dangerous thing. I don't know. Maybe it's a blessing and a curse. Maybe by searching for the idol as openly as I did and saying, come on, guys, this is Survivor. Get with it. Everybody get out there and play. I was pushing my team in a way that was uncomfortable for them. That's possible. But, you know, I'm not the most subtle guy. And you're right. I have a hard time not sort of speaking my mind. But I all I can say is that there's an idol out there that was not found on a beach that they are now not playing on anymore. And it's a lost opportunity, if nothing else.
Now, this season, of course, they brought back your friend Candace and her husband, Dr. John, to the season. Were you surprised to see Candace be voted out on day one?
Well, I mean, this is the how can I put this? Was I surprised? No, because she was a last minute replacement. I don't think that's news anymore that RC and her father were set to play. His blood pressure or something, I'm not exactly clear, did not check out. They realized they were not prepared to put him in the game. This isn't news. I'm sure you know.
No, this has been widely reported.
Right. And so Candace was, called out of the operating room or something glamorous like that. And, they did a gut check. Can we do this? Are we ready to do this? I'm sure they'd had their shots as alternates, and they were flown in and thrust into the game. So to whatever degree the machinations before the game, and even if it's something as simple as, there's 3 or 4 days in Ponderosa, you're not allowed to talk to each other, you're not allowed to talk gameplay with each other, but even just the fact that there's, all those folks are down there looking at each other, and then Candace shows up, it's like, that's an easy vote. Okay, who are we going to vote out? The one that what's she doing here? She's out. Now, if there was pregame nonsense going on before that, I have no idea. But just the fact that it's, last hired, first fired, I think that was probably an easy vote for them to make.
How do you think RC would have done on this season?
Well, I don't know her father. I mean, I've met the man once or twice at the reunion a weekend. A very, very nice guy, very bright guy.
Well, let's forget about him then. Let's just
No. I'm really just thinking if she could dial down the stuff that her tribe found tough to deal with, which is a desire to strategize at all time. She has a wonderful, cute, nervous laugh that is off-putting to some people. If she could just relax and play into the game, she could conceivably have gone far. Why not? Are there any other father-daughter teams out there? There are no father-son teams. There's no father-daughter teams. Who would she have worked with? Could she really work with Sierra or Katie? Those aren't great matches.
Yeah, and she would have been with the
Tina, maybe. No, she probably wouldn't have done great.
Yeah, I don't know. It would be interesting to see. And do you think she would have survived that first vote? Do you think she would have been the first one off, or do you think it would have been somebody else?
Who was it? It was Rupert?
Yeah, they voted. No, they didn't. No, it wasn't Rupert. They voted for Rupert's wife. So I believe it was, did Laura get 3 votes? I think Laura, Tyson, Rupert, and Candace all voted for Laura. Laura M.
Right. Yeah, who's now still around? Huh?
She's back.
Yeah, it's fascinating. Hell, I don't know. Yeah. Who would they have voted for? I mean, RC's a really pretty appealing person. She really is. She's very funny. She's very bright, And if she could just dial it down and have fun, she's very flirtatious, has a great time with guys. They could have voted for her just as easily as Candace, I think. My crystal ball, woulda, shoulda, coulda, is just impossible to play because, you drive yourself crazy.
Sure thing.
I already have.
All right. So now you never played on a season with Redemption Island, but I know we spoke during Survivor South Pacific, which was the last time that they did it. And while Ozzy was, burning through this Redemption Island, do you like when somebody gets to come back into the game?
No, I'm not a big fan of Redemption Island. I think that this this twist with the families and getting to see your loved one at Redemption Island or maybe swapping out for them is okay. You know, can Laura win the game coming out of Redemption Island? I find it hard to believe at this point, you know. You know, as you said at the beginning of our conversation, Aris, this was Tyson's opportunity to make a move. If it was going to get made, he made it, or they made it, whoever was really working with him. And Aris is gone, and now I could easily see Laura going, and I think that Laura and her daughter are going to need to make a move to work with Tina and her daughter and Vetus, and at least try to even out the playing field. I think the problem is that Tina thinks she's the queen of an alliance, but she's really not. And she may have some sense of that now. I think the next episode is going to be the biggest one until damn near the finale.
Yeah, it should be a lot of fireworks.
How this goes is going to really indicate the next 4 weeks of votes, I think.
Now, do you know any of these people that are still in the game, any of these returning players, so that you haven't had a run in with any of these people?
Well, I met Aris once or twice. Very nice guy, but he's sort of half out of the game now, right?
Yeah.
Vetus, I've never met. None of them have I met. Maybe, you know, shake their hand or something, you know, in passing at a party, or, hey, how you doing? Love your gameplay kind of thing. Tyson, you know, he and I have sort of pointed at each other. Hey, man.
Okay.
Tina, no. Monica, no. No.
All right. So
who do you like out there?
Well, I've had on the podcast a number of these folks. I think of these people that are all left, the returning players. Well, when I lost on Survivor All-Stars, I went on our vacation with Tina, that I know Otis from, you know, from, he's been on the podcast a bunch of times. I know him from LA. Monica, I've had on the podcast. Jervis, I knew from way back when on the East Coast, and when I first got off my show the first time. And Tyson's been on the podcast a bunch too. And and Hayden too, from podcast about Big Brother. So you should interview me, Penner.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. You know, I appreciate the interest, but I you know, you're seriously the expert.
Yeah.
Well, who do you? I mean, maybe you can't say because you've got to be much more objective about all this, but. Who do you like at this point?
Well, I would say that I feel like, you know, the guy who is has the clear in the driver's seat is Tyson. He has nowhere to go but down. So it's really going to be, you know, now he's almost like he played with Boston Rob his last time out. So now it's really going to be a matter of, can he do what Boston Rob was able to do on Survivor Redemption Island, the original Redemption Island? And basically, how do you get from having a group of seven to being in the final three and in the position to win? And it was like the following season on Survivor South Pacific, Coach basically tried to pull that same thing off, and he was able to get to the final three, but he wasn't able to get there with a group that he could win the game. So now it's almost like that Jenga game of, hey, I've got this stack, and now I need to how do I take out the rest of the pieces in a way so that the whole thing doesn't come falling down? And so now it's Tyson's game to lose, I feel like, and it's going to be interesting to see how he goes about doing that.
You're exactly right. Perfect analysis. I agree with everything you just said. And that's one of the reasons why I think that next week, how this splits up, whether he can keep these folks in line for one more vote, and then he can start culling from his own group, or whether they're going to break off, and then who can pull that sixth person back to their side. I just don't know.
Yeah.
I just don't know. No one wants to be sixth.
And for Jervis, his game will then become, you know, how do I get to the end and either showcase myself in a way that I could beat Tyson in the end, or how do I pull together a group that can knock out Tyson so I could be the top guy? I feel like for this, you know, Hayden and Caleb and Sierra, they're sort of like, hey, how do we get it so that, you know, we're the top three in this group so that we can take out Tyson and Jervis? And you know, the thing about Survivor, it's like, hey, like, we want to pat ourselves on the back, our big plan worked, we got out Otis, okay, well, now it's the next day, and now what's, you know, what's the next plan? And so
go ahead.
Yeah, it's a moving target for 39 days,
you know. And I think, I mean, I'll speak for myself only, but there is some, and maybe this has been, you know, a mistake that I've made, although I've sort of put targets on my back and just tried to scramble to stay alive and have certainly made mistakes along the way, maybe too many of them, obviously. But there is a comfort in, like, this is someone that I've worked with, can work with comfortably. We've gotten this far. Our plan has worked. And when are you going to cut that off? And sometimes people get to the point where they're either going to have to cut them off or keep going. No, I can make it to the final two or three with this person. It will work, and I will take my chances. And if somebody's going to have to beat me, I'd rather it be this person than anybody else, you know? And I think that Jervis is probably going to be facing that. And whether he will ever make the move to topple Tyson is going to be a very, very interesting thing for us to watch.
Yeah, and, you know, we've talked a lot in the last couple of weeks about is Survivor sexist, and is there sexism on Survivor? So to be completely even-handed, let me say that I use Boston Rob as the analogy. Just as well, you could use Kim Spradlin in Survivor One World. You know, she has this group of six or seven people that she's working with in that season, and she says, okay, now I got to get rid of, you know, Troy, Zan, and Jonas, and these guys, and I'm going to go to the end with my group of three, which I know I can beat. So it's a tough thing to do, though, because you end up being seen as the person who made all the decisions, and you have to get those people at the end of the game to vote for you.
Yep. But, you know, usually if you can do it in a way that's not personal, they will vote for you.
Yeah.
You know, if you can do it so that you're not lying to them and not betraying them, and they don't think that you're the one they're the one that you're going to take to the final two or three. If you're going to cut those people off, you've got to do it pre-jury. If you're going to cut people off, you've got to do it in such a way that you make them feel like you're the one letting them know that it's not your decision, that, you know, you're just going along with the group. You know, we can all say that Tyson is running the ship, but the next person that gets voted off, you hope that Tyson's going to be the one to go to and say, listen, you know how I feel about you. I want to keep you here. I'm letting you know that this is going to come down. And you've got to do that. I mean, maybe Tina thought she was doing that to Monica, mm-hmm. but she did it publicly and stupidly and too soon. It's, you know, that's almost the art of Survivor is to kill someone and make them feel good about it.
Yeah. All right, well, let's talk about that scene last night with Tina and Monica. So Tina came back after the tribal council where they voted out Laura. And so basically she said to Monica, like, hey, Monica, you're going to... basically, she says, you're going to... you did more than Jervis. You deserve to be here. You're gonna be fourth place, not or you're gonna be fifth and not sixth because we're moving. You got a promotion, and she's like, "Hey,
who knows what madness was going through her mind?" You know, here she thought she was doing Monica a favor.
Yeah,
right. That's the problem. She thought she was being nice, being menschy, doing her a favor, and giving her a promotion. And, I say that's the mistake that's going to cost her whatever shot at the game she has, you know, and she did it too soon and too publicly. I mean, it was a silly thing to say anyway. Why tell somebody that? But again, I can only assume she did it because she thought she was helping Monica in some way, you know, easing her pain. What I just said that you need to do more artfully, she did inartfully and to her own, demise, I think.
Yeah, I think that was sort of like the, to speak frankly, the poop on somebody's head, and then it's like, hey, thank you for the hat. And I think that was basically...
Well, I think they only showed us that, right? Because it had no effect on the outcome of this episode. I think they showed us that because when Tina gets voted out, they're going to point to that. Monica's going to point to that as the reason.
Yeah.
You know.
What do you think of Monica so far? I mean, basically, she's been the one that's been the two-time Survivor player, but I feel like we almost don't know that much about her as opposed to her husband that I feel like we learned a lot about in his four episodes that were in the game. Do you think Monica is a player?
Well, I think she is. I think she's actually fascinating, and she's growing on me. Maybe just the longer that she's out there, you know. I think it's hard because her face is literally like an unreadable mask, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know how she's achieved that, I'm not sure. But even after 20 days, she hasn't changed. You know, her arms are stringier, but she still looks like she's at a cocktail party.
Poker face.
She looks perfect, right?
Mm-hmm.
She just looks like she's got a tan, healthy glow, and she doesn't reveal anything, really. So it is hard to get to feel like you know her. I assume there's something going on. She's playing, by anybody's standards, a hell of a game. And there's every reason to believe that she's going to continue to do that and make it to the final five. And even she could, although I don't think she's getting really a winner's edit, I think she, you know, we shouldn't be surprised to see her in the final three.
Yeah.
Right? You know, unfortunately, we don't, maybe what you see is exactly what you get. Maybe with a guy like her husband, you know, you need the tattoos to get a sense of who he is. Here is a beautiful woman. She's obviously glamorous and super well put together. She's nobody's fool. She's not stupid. Her what kind of intelligence she has is not being put across, but it's there. And she's a, you know, a super mom, type A, cocktail party, very successful, beautiful person who's not going to give it up to a bunch of strangers or to the TV camera. As much as we'd like to see her do that, I certainly would, but maybe what you see is exactly what you would get. I wouldn't be surprised.
So would you have gotten along with Brad Culpepper if you were out there with him?
I probably would have in the way that I got along with Jeff Kent. You know, I grew up not dealing with jocks. I certainly liked a lot of my friends were jocks, and that's an old term at this point. But, you know, I was never a jockey kind of guy. I was a little guy for most of my high school years. It's only when I was like a senior that I even grew at all. I was a theater guy. I was a loudmouth little, you know, nerd, obnoxious guy. Nothing has changed except my size. And I would have certainly gotten along with him. He probably would have had a harder time trying to figure out what made me tick
mm-hmm.
than I would have figuring out what made him tick. And out there, you know, you have to find some common ground. Jeff Kent could never understand how I could just sit there with Dawson and Katie and just giggle. I mean, all those girls wanted to talk about is like body parts and sex and that's it. And what steakhouse you'd like to go to eat at.
And what's wrong with that? That sounds like a hell of a podcast.
It sounds like, it was just fun. So finding a common ground with a couple of 20-year-old cute girls was easy for me. I had a ball. Whereas he, you know, it's like, why, you know, why, I can't do that. I don't want to do that. That's not interesting to me. And, you know, we would have found, Brad Culpepper and I would have found some kind of common ground, and I would have tried to vote his ass out as quickly as possible. Absolutely.
Yeah. So I think the interesting side of this equation, so basically the way I'm looking at it, we have Tyson Jervis, Monica, Hayden, Caleb, and Laura, and Sierra plus Laura. So that's seven. And then on the other side, we have Vetus, Tina, and Katie. So I think the more interesting side of things is, how does the Vetus, Tina, and I'm not even going to mention Katie. So how did Vetus and Tina play it next week? And Katie, I assume, just goes with whatever her mom does.
Of course she will. They need to make a move on either Laura and Sierra or on Tyson and Caleb, I think, right?
Tyson and Caleb?
Not Caleb, but Tyson and
that group.
Hayden.
Okay.
Sorry. Hayden and Caleb.
Got it.
Is that his name?
Yeah, well, it depends who you're talking about. But yeah, there is a guy named Caleb, and there is a guy named Hayden.
He's the gay guy
who's
the boyfriend of Colton.
Yeah, Colton's
left, right?
Fiance.
Fiance, sorry. Yeah. So Caleb and Hayden are a possibility, right? I have no idea how tight they really are with Tyson and Jervis, whether it's like, no, we're going to the final five and that's it. Probably that's the case, and they have every reason to think that with Monica, that will work, you know?
Mm.
The odd man out of that group is Sierra, I think, although, of course, anyone who could take her to a Final Three would beat her. I just don't think the guys are thinking in that way. And I'm not sure Monica is either. So I have to assume they're going to either try to go for Laura and Sierra, or they're going to try to go for the two odd men, and they'll probably have a better shot at Laura and Sierra.
Well, here's the thing, though. They need both. Yeah. You need, basically, so if you want to break this game up, so you have... I'm going to put Monica with Tyson and Jervis. You have a threesome there, Tyson, Jervis, Monica. Then you have a pair in Hayden and Caleb. Then you have another pair in Laura and Sierra. And then you have the pair of Tina and Katie plus Vetus. So that's another group of three. So if you figure if those groupings stay together, you basically, if you're Vetus, Tina, and Katie, not only do you need to pull in Hayden and Caleb, that'll give you five, and then that would only be a tie. You need at least somebody else, too. You probably need to get Laura and Sierra also. So maybe you could go on two fronts, and it's like, okay, Vetus, you work on Hayden and Caleb. You were their tribe mates from the get-go, and work on them. And then Tina and Katie, you work on Laura and Sierra and say, hey, let's get team mom and daughter back together. But at the end of the day, nobody is moving up in the ranks because everybody over here feels...
It's not going to work because why move from a seven to a seven?
Right.
You know? To me, what's interesting about what you just laid out, and I think it's absolutely correct, is that we're looking at two strong threesomes with a weaker foursome, okay, floating around, which is with Laura and Sierra and Caleb and Hayden. Okay, there's three returning players who are set. There's Vetus, Tina, and Katie, and then there's this foursome. But in fact, mathematically, the foursome should be the strong players. If that foursome, if Laura really had something under the hood, and I don't think she probably does at this point, having spent so much time on redemption to really take the control. But let's say Hayden has been playing in a way that the cameras haven't shown us, mm-hmm. but let's say he is in that power position. You could tell the other three, we're going to vote one way, and tell the other three, we're going to go with you and we're going to vote one way. You have three on three voting for each other, basically, and they get to pick who they want. And if they were smart, that foursome could play off those threes against each other for a little while and decide how they want to move forward. Hmm. If they could really work strongly together. Unfortunately, neither one of us believes that that's what's going to happen, right? We think that Tyson's in the driver's seat, and Medvedis and Tina together are pretty savvy players and are trying to figure out how to pull people over to them.
Yeah,
I just don't see that Hayden, Caleb, Laura, and Sierra are working in the way that they could work mm-hmm. and go to the final five together.
You make a really good point. I think you're right. I think that if Hayden and Caleb wanted to, you know, they already have Sierra, who's been with them from the start, and Laura with that group of four. And maybe, you know, you're a little scared because Laura and Sierra are a pair. But I kind of feel like maybe you could go with I'm thinking if you went with Vetus, Tina, and Katie, is that a better seven than the group with Tyson and Jervis and Monica? Because Tyson and Jervis probably are more threatening. To you have two guys who could be challenged threats as opposed to just Vetus. But then you're with the moms.
If they had the balls to do this, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
I'm just talking it through on both sides. But then the negative to that would be, you know, then you're screwing over Tyson and Jervis and Monica, so you're making enemies on the jury, and you also have the possibility that the team moms, mom and daughters, could get together, and that's a group of four, which outnumbers your group of three of Hayden, Caleb, and Vetus, so that's not really an ideal situation either.
I think the way you'd have to do it, and again, we're talking so hypothetically because we haven't seen any indication that these four are going to do this, have the wherewithal to make this work. But if they could just pick one side or another, okay, guys, we're going to work with you. Just even keep it with Tyson and Jervis, let's say. No, we're going to stay with you, and we vote off Vetus. Okay? Mm-hmm. Then the four of them go to Tina and Katie, who are in desperate straits, mm-hmm. and say, you can be voted off now, or you can be five and six. Come with us right now, and we're going to vote off Jervis.
Yeah.
You know, meanwhile, they're telling Jervis, Tyson, and Monica, of course, it's us seven, and they believe that they're the bottom of the seven, right? They vote off Monica at that point, or they vote off Jervis using Tina. You know, so you've got two pissed off people, you know, or one pissed off person. Let's say it's Jervis. He's pissed off. Okay, you got me. But then at that point, you get to kind of pick if you're prepared to stay that strong with the four. And unfortunately, I just see that those four are the ones who are in play. They're not the ones making the calls.
Yeah.
You'd have to go with Tyson to the end, or you'd have to flush out the idol. And they might just decide to do that. You know, you flush out the idol, vote for Tyson, it bounces off, Tina goes home, and onward, you know.
Now, do you think there's any chance that Vetus survives the vote next week if he doesn't win immunity?
Only if the initial idea that we had played out, which is that the three of them can somehow appeal, this is my idea at least, mm-hmm. can appeal to Sierra and Laura and say, look, you guys are 6 and 7. You'll be 4 and 5. One of them, Vetus, is smart enough to say, I will take you to the final three.
Yeah.
Take me. I will go to the final three with you. Please come to our side.
The problem is it's almost too early for that sort of thing, especially also it's an even number. And it's always like the big swings on Survivor, I feel like, after the merge tend to happen when there's an odd number, when it's like one person is the swing vote. It's five versus four. Whereas opposed to here, we have a group of 10 where it's going to be.
But what we're saying, listen to what we're saying. You're absolutely right. And I think that's what's going to play out, right? Which is that Vetus probably will go home and then. And then they'll figure it out from there. You know, Tina and Katie will make some desperate move, and maybe the foursome that we were just talking about will realize, oh, crap, we're on the bottom. We have to break off at that point. That's when the big swing is going to happen. But if they recognize what's going on and could make a move now, they could change their fortunes in the game. I really think so. Whether they will or not, that's always the debate. That's what killed me in the last time I played. The debate is, and it's because I was playing against the game I played once before. I had determined not to make my move too soon. Can't make your move too soon. Got to just hang in there. Make your allies, stick with them as best you can, go forward in a trustworthy way, and then you're going to make one move in the game, big move, and that will get you to the end. And I waited too long. I didn't realize that the move had already been made or was already being made.
Yeah.
You know? So I don't know. It's all going to come down in the next two weeks. I think next week is a super monumentally important week.
Let's Monday morning quarterback this a little bit. What should Otis have done differently? He looked like early on in the first half of the game, he looked like he was the person who was in the best position in the entire game. Now he ultimately becomes the first person voted out after the merge. Where should his head have been at this point?
Finding an idol, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
He was in the same position that I was in. You get an idol and you live to see one more day. It would have been his brother going home. Part of it is that, you know, the teams that are still there are essentially weak, right? Now that he's gone. You know, that was an obvious team to break up. There was no way the two of them were not going to go to the end together if they could. In the same way, you know, that Sierra and her mom are going to go to the end if they can. Can you see either one of them cutting each other's throats? Is all that stuff last night about Sierra saying my mom's having her here as a kind of a pain, is that setting us up to believe that she may cut her mom's throat next week? Possibly. That would be fascinating. I don't see Tina or Katie cutting each other off. That's not going to happen.
But I don't really think that Sierra is ever going to vote her out. I think that she might feel like, oh, like if my mom got voted out, that would actually be a good thing for my game. But I can't see her contributing to her mom leaving the game.
Right. I can't either. So I think that's where it came down. It was either going to be Vetus or Aris. We're going to, you know, one immunity. You know, they were just too strong. They're too strong a team. And, you know, why they weren't able to muster the votes to get rid of Tyson or Jervis, they didn't even try. You know, those aren't the names that were thrown in the hat. And so that maybe he needed to just play a stronger game and say, no, I've got to get rid of one of these guys. Maybe he wasn't threatened by Aris or Jervis. I guess he wasn't.
Okay. All right, so we have so many questions here for you that you always, whenever we talk to you on the podcast, the listeners always have so many questions to you on our Facebook page. Of course, if you want to join in the fun every week with us, facebook.com/RobHasAPodcast. All right, so we have so many different things to jump into. Let's start with Nick Fishman, who wants to know, whose story this season could use a rewrite?
Nick, good question. I guess ours is feeling like his could. Whose story could use a rewrite? You know, I think Katie's, because she just isn't there, right? She's getting the Carter cut. Right?
Nobody wants Carter cut.
Nobody wants the Carter cut. And, you know, Carter's a pretty funny guy. I mean, casting, as you all know, if you're interested in getting on Survivor, they go through thousands of people who want to be on Survivor. That they would pick Katie, not only because of Tina. There were many, many, many people who wanted to play again with their loved ones, and they deemed the loved ones not interesting enough. So somehow Katie, whatever wowed them in the room, her vivaciousness, she's certainly an appealing person, but she just is not coming across. And I'd love to know what her story could have been or what they saw that we're not seeing when they cast her.
This is from Dave Hunter, who wants to know, how does Penner feel about Propst ripping off his "what is your story" line to players at Tribal Council? Now, this was a couple of weeks ago, back when it was Laura and Vetus on the chopping block, and Propst started talking about it like, hey, this guy Vetus, he's got this story, and then he started asking Laura about what's your story this season. Did you feel like that was ripping you off?
No, I don't think so, because you know, for whatever reason, they decided that the way that I put that when I was talking to Lisa was worth putting on TV. And I only think that people were intrigued by it because it seemed to be revealing something that the editors didn't have to reveal, which is that they edit stories, that these are stories. Nothing gets on screen. This is why I keep talking about, do we think that we saw Sierra say that because it's going to come back? Nothing is vague or random. They have too much footage. They shoot a million feet of film for this show over the course of 39 days. You know, that, just try to picture that. The world is 25,000 miles around. A million feet of film goes around the world how many times? That they edit it down into 44 minutes is crazy. And it's all about the story. Everything is moving forward towards that vote. So the point that I'm getting to is that they know that they're editing stories. They know that they're telling stories. And they know that the people that they put out there, some of them, have compelling backstories, compelling things that are going to humanize them to the audience and to the other players. And, you know, I was able to bring that out and explain that to Lisa, who may not have thought about it. She probably did. She's a very smart, savvy person. But for whatever reason, they decided to put that on the air. I don't think they were ripping me off. I just think that having put what I said on the air, that was now an open conversation for them all to talk about.
All right. Mark Solera wants to know, why did you say that Laura B has the worst shirt in Survivor history? And if she has the worst, who has the best? All right. Now, did you say on Twitter that Laura Boneham has the worst shirt in Survivor history?
She showed up in this tie-dyed shirt with a pink emblem. I don't know. It just, you know, obviously that was a not kind thing to say, but it just struck me as being the worst shirt, you know, a terrible shirt. I don't know what it said. It probably said, you know, I love Penner or something. I'm probably putting my foot in a terrible way. I'm guaranteed that's not what it said.
Yeah.
But I'm saying, like, you know, it might have been like, feed the children, or, you know, the world is a beautiful place. So I apologize to her if I insulted her shirt. I still didn't like the shirt. I have no real taste of my own, as those who have ever seen me on that. The best shirt... the best shirt in Survivor, I guess Probst has that crazy shirt that no one... What are those shirts? The Probst shirt. They must call it the Probst. Where do you find that? It's like a jungle shirt? Maybe it's like the guys who host the safari cruises at the Disneyland
Yeah.
wear a shirt like that?
Okay.
I don't know. What's the best shirt? Rob, what's your favorite shirt?
Oh, the best shirt in Survivor history. Oh, that's tough. I feel like there's been some good shirts in Big Brother history. I'm trying to think of one.
Monica's wearing a pretty good shirt. A very sparkly shirt.
Yeah.
Yeah. The cocktail party shirt.
Yeah. How about bringing Rupert back a fourth time this season? When you first saw that they were going to bring Rupert back for time number four, I don't think we've ever spoken about Rupert in all of it. Actually, this is your podcast number four, not counting exit interviews.
I'm sure there are people who can't believe that you've brought me back.
So were you when you heard Rupert was coming back for a fourth time, you were like, okay, that sounds pretty good. Or like, oh, really?
Rupert... I'm not sure what more Rupert has had to say. Rupert said it very quickly in showing his adoration for his wife. This season was about us getting to know her. And this is a perfect example of what I mean, where, you know, they cast couples where, yes, you know you're going to get what you're going to get from Rupert, but you don't know who the hell would be married to Rupert and support him in his Survivor madness and his Muppet-esque antics and his running for governor and all the wonder that is Rupert. Who's married to that person? That's an interesting character. I'm not sure we got as much from her as I would have liked to have seen. She's probably got a hell of a sense of humor if she's married to Rupert, and I really didn't see that. So that's why I was glad they brought Rupert back, was I got a chance to see who would be married to him and what her taste in shirts would be like.
Were you disappointed we didn't get to see any Hances here? I thought for sure we were going to, when I heard about this format.
I hate watching that. Listen, if you and I ever get to play again, we'd probably have to play with a Hance. And, you know, I would like to know what really goes on and makes them tick. I was talking about Monica is what you see, what you get. I cannot believe that what I'm seeing is not exactly what I would get. So was I disappointed not to see the Hances? No, I'm tired of the Hances.
All right. So, well, since you bring up the subject of you and I going back on the show, you know, there's all these rumors floating around about this big season that's coming up, the Survivor Robs versus John season that everybody's talking about. There's all these pregame alliances being made. Uyanga B wants to know, Penner, in the Robs versus John season, would you align with your old chum Johnny Fairplay? Now, what would when you show up on the beach for Survivor Robs versus John's, would you be able to work with Fairplay, or would he be an early target?
Would he be an early target? He certainly would be.
Yeah.
If they ever let Johnny Fairplay play again. You know, the poor guy would not that he's a poor guy, but he, you know, the target on his back, it wouldn't be on his back. It would be right between his eyes and he would see it coming. I don't know that he would ever put himself out there at this point to us to vote him off immediately. How he could scramble and try to imply to anyone that he was worth keeping around would be amazing to watch, and I'm sure a vain attempt at survival.
Would you guys throw the first challenge to vote out Johnny Fairplay?
No, never blow a challenge. That's always a mistake.
Okay, but if you...
If we had Johnny Fairplay on our team, I wouldn't be surprised if we lost the first challenge.
Is it safe to say
we would need to blow the first challenge?
That because you played with Candace, that you would probably have a good relationship with John Cody?
I could certainly see playing with John Cody. I think that we would probably have the same kind of. Yeah, I would love to work with John Cody. Sounds like a very, very interesting guy. Obviously, a very smart guy, and a big guy, and he'd be a great guy to have on your team. I mean, I don't know. Let me ask you this. Do you think that people consider me at this point trustworthy or untrustworthy or somebody that they would want to work with or somebody that they would want to eliminate immediately?
Well, I think that you'd be pretty trustworthy because, going back for a pretty long time, I think you have a pretty good track record of, you end up getting into some tiffs with people on the show, but there's not really a big record at this point of you really betraying people and their confidence. I think that you've had a pretty clean resume. I know everybody's like, oh, mutiny. But, you know, that's not really so much like you stab somebody in the back as opposed to like, hey, what team do you want to be on?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. As we were watching last night, I was talking to somebody about the mutiny the other day. Oh, a friend of mine that I was watching with says, you know, who still cannot forgive Candace. She's the one who can't forgive Candace. And I'm like, you can't forgive Candace. I've forgiven her. There's nothing even to forgive. I mean, you know, I was out there, and I'm sorry to bring it back to me and explaining my life or my situation, but you know, she was the closest thing to a real ally that I had out there. I couldn't align with Yul closer than he was aligned with Becky. You know, Ozzy wasn't going to align with me or frankly with anybody. And Candace and I, who were actually working pretty well together, I had no idea that she was anxious to get back with the monkey boy, whatever. Adam. And, you know,
Adam's
when she
the
stepped
boy?
Off the night before, we had like, you know, I'm like, okay, we're together. Right. And we're like, she's like, yeah, we're together. So when she stepped off, I'm like, oh crap. Okay, well, here we go. And I followed her off the mat, you know, my mistake was being too loyal to somebody that wasn't ready. She didn't even realize really that I was serious about, you know, you're my ally and I'm ready to go to the end with you. So that was my mistake. Maybe that's why my friend can't forgive her, because she didn't know that I was trustworthy.
All right. Well,
go ahead.
Oh, I was gonna say, I have another question about Candace, but I can't remember. Did we answer the last question?
Would I work with John Cody? Absolutely.
Okay. What about John Cochran? Is he in the alliance?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay. All right. Well, I think once we get to the merge, Penner, I feel good. I think we can keep this thing going.
You and me? I'd love to work with you.
Yeah, this would be good.
Oh, shit. Did I just blow up both of our chances if we ever play again?
Okay, I don't think so.
Yeah, but you know everybody. See, that's the thing. Everybody would want to work with you and would think like, okay, great. Well, Sestorino will work with me. That'll be perfect.
But I feel like it would be the opposite. I feel like people say, oh, well, he knows everybody, so we have to get rid of him.
Oh, shit.
I kind of feel that's like, I feel like I'm in trouble, Penner.
But you know what's great about Survivor? Everybody feels like they're in trouble.
Oh, good.
Yeah. No. Every single, you know, I feel like I would be in trouble out there because I don't know everybody.
Yeah.
You know, I don't go to any Survivor. I don't know if there are any, but, you know, I don't go to the run for fun or the relay thing or, you know, I'm always hearing, oh, yeah, I went to Kansas City. I was running for the kids. I'm like, what do you mean you were running for the? Oh, yeah, everybody was there. I'm like, who the hell was there? I was never invited, you know.
Yeah.
So I think that everybody, like, hangs out in hotels and drinks, probably does a lot more than that, and plots. So that's why I'm afraid to go back yet, because I'm not in a hotel plotting.
Yeah. I don't, see, the thing about me, though, is that I am, you know, I never get invited to anything, first of all. And second of all, yeah, I do talk to all the survivors, but all my conversations are recorded for the public to hear. Like, I have a very transparent relationship with all the survivors. But the only thing
okay,
that makes...
But you're nice to everybody. You're not having a relationship where you're getting into fights with somebody, are you?
No, I have a very good track record.
Fair play what you really thought of him.
Very few fights going on here. The only thing that I have going for me on Survivor Robs versus Johns that I have on good authority from Boston Rob that he says I'm good. So I have that
in my
back pocket.
Yeah, but he's the one who should be freaking afraid.
No.
I mean, I think it's amazing that Aris and Tina lasted as long as they did.
Yeah.
You know, I guess everyone said, okay, we'll get rid of them eventually, you know. They must have talked to each other and said, look, we have to work together because otherwise we're going to be the first two out.
Yeah. Well, and then I think it's no coincidence that the loved ones were also working together, too, when they brought in Katie and brought in Vetus.
Well, look, obviously, some conversation was had. Aris and, you know, because they have a secret society of winners where they have the handshake, they have the clubhouse and the whole thing.
Right, right.
You know, the two of them must have,
at some point
in one of their secret meetings, agreed to work together.
Right. So let's talk about the three-time returning player, Candace, here. And this is from Karen Grunwald, who wants to know, Jonathan, why is it they keep bringing Candace back season after season? Am I missing something? I could think of a couple of other women I would rather see for a third time. Amy Cusack, Kim Spradlin, Courtney Yates, just for an example of stronger, more strategic players, in my opinion. What is Karen missing?
Karen, you're not missing anything. couple of things. First off, Candace, thank you for being the third term player to do worse than me. Appreciate that. Again, it goes back to, first off, we finally got to see some of that fire in Candace that we only saw towards the end when she tried to sort of bitch slap me before she got voted out on Cook Islands. You know,
right.
We finally got to see that sass. She is a fabulous lady, unbelievably strong-willed, great athlete, beautiful, and she married this guy who could be a genuine survivor contestant. You know, they need a couple out there in this iteration. It wasn't just Candace. And I think that they felt that they had never fully gotten the Candace that, as I say, that they saw in the room, that they knew was lurking in there when they cast her. They brought her back in Heroes versus Villains, why she was a hero and Parvati was a villain, or was it the other way around? I don't even remember. But somehow the two of them were differentiated. And here she was brought back because she's married to John Cody, who's a hell of a contestant, you know. And she gave great TV this time. I really think she did.
Yeah.
So I don't think you're missing anything. I think that you got to see what you'd been missing before. How's that for an answer?
I think that's pretty good. So this is from M. Whitmore 10, and this is from the Rob Has a Podcast subreddit. He wants to know who will be
first,
the...
First, thank you for having the best name of the day, M. Whitmore 10.
10, 10.
10. 10?
Yeah.
Ooh, he might be my cousin. No, I have cousins. The 10 family, it's an old...
Us.
It's true. Anyway, go ahead. Okay, M.
I hear sometimes that they change that at Ellis Island to just one.
They shortened it from 10 to 1 to 9.
They shortened it. He wants to know, who's going to be the first four-time player from Survivor Cook Islands? So now, this is interesting, the Survivor Cook Islands. Amazingly, your winner, Yule, he only gets to play once. He's one and done. But now you have Parvati. She's come back three times. You have Ozzy. He's come back three times. You have yourself, who's come back three times. And now Candace Woodcock Cody. She comes back three times. So... who is going to be the first person from your season to play four times?
Well, it's going to be, they're going to do it one of two ways, right? Either Ozzy or Parvati will come back in some strange iteration, like I came back, you know, Survivor, injured old guys, right? You know, that's how I got to play my third time. So either they'll bring them back, you know, Survivor, tree swingers, or Survivor, hostesses, or, you know, I don't know how they would justify bringing one of the two of them back in a smaller way, or more than one of us will come back for fourth times in a, if it's not Rob's versus John's, it'll be some, what they're calling, you know, what I've heard the buzz on, some legends kind of show, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where they're going to go out with a bang and they're going to bring a ton of people down there, including, I have to assume Ozzy is in the mix, whether he comes down or not. I have to assume Parvati is going to be in the mix. Candace could be in the mix as a three-time player, and I could even be in the mix, you know, as one of the great three-time players, never to do better than seventh place.
Rarefied, you know, I mean, air.
What's that?
The rarefied air. Yes.
Yes, the rarefied air of a three-time player has never gotten better than seventh. You know, I would like to see them bring down 30 of us, something like that, and do what they did this time with two, and just vote off or have some live internet vote off. I don't know how the hell you would do it. You know, so some crazy thing where they bring down a ton of people and just really mix it up.
You want to have
the first challenge. In the first challenge, the tribe that comes in third place, they all go home.
Whoa.
I don't know, something crazy, right? Because there's certainly, if it's going to be the final season, and they're talking about doing some major thing on the final season, shit, bring down 30. There's at least 30 people that you'd like to see for at least one episode of Survivor.
Yeah.
And really make the stakes high. Or every time there's a vote off, two people go home.
You want some sort of combination between, like, the Royal Rumble and, like, the NCAA tournament. Some sort of madness.
I don't know. I'm just spitballing here. Wouldn't that be cool to double your fun every night, every time two people go home?
Whoa. I was pretty pumped up about Survivor Robs versus Johns, though.
Yeah, I like it. Because my name is John, so I get to play. It's fantastic. Are there enough Robs and Johns?
Yeah, I think so. Also, RC is in the mix. She gets to come. And so, yeah, there's at least...
How about R's versus J's, maybe? Because you've got to get more than RC. It can't be 19 Robs and Johns and RC.
No, I think you can cast it. I think that I mean, I didn't make this up. I mean, this is what the buzz is that I'm hearing.
The buzz?
Yeah.
That's the buzz of one thing buzzing. Okay, I don't know. Listen, I'm all for it. My name's John. Bring me down. Who knows?
Yeah.
Okay.
Brian Scali wants to know, did Laura and Sierra make the correct move siding with Tyson's alliance, and when should they flip on the current alliance? So we talked about this a little bit last night on the Survivor Know-It-Alls with Steven, and we talked about, should Laura and Sierra have really looked into the pairs grouping? Now, it didn't seem like Otis and Vetus were into it, but should they have tried to get Otis, Vetus, Tina, Katie, and then Laura and Sierra? Would there have been more safety there?
Well, that's what we talked about. And for whatever reason, did they make the right move going with that seven versus the six? Only time will tell. Unfortunately, none of us believe that they didn't make the right move because they didn't take control of the game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Sierra wasn't going to, and Laura is feeling too vulnerable or maybe isn't capable of it.
But
you know,
I do feel
she doesn't see that she's in an incredibly powerful position. Or if she sees it, she doesn't seem ready to take the bull by the horns. And some of that has to be either stuff that we're not seeing, you know, or why they made that choice. I mean, as we're sitting here, you'd say, well, hell, why not be six instead of seven? That would be the smarter thing. So I guess they didn't make the right choice.
But I feel like they did, and we kind of know more than they do. But considering the fact that Otis voted out Laura once and then was targeting her again last night, I have to feel like they're better off with the guy who keeps targeting her
out of the game. No, wait a second. But he targeted her once, but and we don't know the conversations. She, you know, he voted for her, I'm sure, because he knew that she was not going to work with him, that he was going to be the one going home. And so they said, well, you know, at least I'll vote against the person who I feel has betrayed me, who has not worked with me, though I tried to get her to work with me. I'm sure that's what that vote was about.
Yeah. How about the whole massage thing a couple of weeks ago? Now, a lot of people went back and forth on this. Some people said, hey, no harm, no foul. Some people said, I don't know about that. As a three-time Survivor player, any issue with things that happen in the context of Survivor as far as like people of opposite sexes giving them a massage?
Well, I can't say like definitively, no, don't give a massage. I don't know if I ever got a massage.
I know I didn't.
But certainly, I mean, not on Survivor. I mean, certainly if, no, you know what's funny? Like Candace and I gave each other like a spa treatment, you know, or I was there doing spa treatments. You know, I did her back and she did my back. This was sort of when I thought we were working together. So yeah, it was a smart move on her part, you know, to say, oh, let's have a spa day or something. It worked on me. Anything bad about doing it? If somebody asked me, if my teammate of Dawson said, hey, would you give me a massage? I've thrown my back out. Sure, I'd help her out. Of course I would. I wouldn't say, no, I don't feel comfortable doing that. Why not? And, you know, if you film it, you say, my wife knows what's going on. What about you? What about your wife?
Oh, my wife would not care for that.
If you gave Dawson a massage, anybody a massage?
Yeah, that I would be in trouble when I came home. But my wife is very possessive of me, Penner. She is very worried that another woman is going to come along and swoop me away.
Well, she's right to be worried that other women would want to.
Yeah.
And wrong to be worried that would happen.
Yeah, so I try to reassure her, but she's very convinced somebody's going to come along and steal me.
And swoop.
Yes, and swoop in. Very concerned.
Some scooping chick.
All right, so let's talk about this. That a lot of people have been asking me about this. So Ivan wants to know, Jonathan, can you please explain your Twitter feud with Tyson's girlfriend Rachel that's been lasting for weeks now? Now, we've been following this very closely, and it seems to be a very odd feud of all people that you and Tyson's girlfriend are seem to be locked in this feud on Twitter.
It's strange. I do not feel that I'm locked in a feud with Tyson's girlfriend. I'm glad to hear it because I'll end it right now. I'm not in a feud with Tyson's girlfriend. I don't know Tyson's girlfriend. Tyson, you know, I said something. I mean, I don't even know. I said something about, because I live tweet, and I said something about Tyson's hair or something.
Mm-hmm.
And then she said, well, you know, you're, at least his hair isn't ugly. Like, I don't know what she said.
Yeah, well, I
and
actually I have the transcript.
Genuinely
here.
Confused by what she said because I thought it was sort of untoward. And now, unfortunately, you know, she doesn't like the fact that I think he has a hair, television hair issue. So, you know, do I have to stop tweeting about his hair? It's all in good fun. And, you know, I'll stop tweeting because I don't want to be in a feud with her. I don't even know the woman. Do you know her, Rachel?
I've never met her in person. I only know her as Tyson's girlfriend. But so that I guess this started on the 23rd of October. You
oh
had
my
tweeted.
God. There's dates. I guess there's a paper trail. Of course there is. Yeah. The 23rd of October. Okay.
You tweeted, you said that Otis's hair is too nice, but Tyson is bizarre, was what you had tweeted. And so then Rachel tweeted, well, Jim, at Tyson Apostle's girlfriend slash wife is hotter than your girlfriend or wife, so there. Which brought your wonderful wife, Stacy, into question, which is you never can attack somebody's. It's like the mafia. You can't go after loved ones unless they go on Survivor.
Well, that's exactly right. I'm not quite sure what that was about and why she would go, you know, to there. So I said something like, "Are you insulting my wife? Should I be insulted?
No,
or are you just
here's what you said." You said,
go ahead, please. I don't remember exactly what was said, but please, you obviously have it in front of you, so
yes.
Let me hear it.
You said, who's Jim? And then, you clarified, Rachel, mind clarifying this tweet? Should my wife and I be insulted or just bewildered? Thanks.
Right.
And that was it for that week. But then it continued into, further weeks.
Well, she never responded to that.
Right.
And I thought we were essentially done with it. You know, I mean, I certainly did not mean to get into a feud with her. But OK, so then what happened? Yeah,
I'm
fascinated.
So then last on October 30th, you tweeted, Otis now meditates as the others plot. Awesome. Tyson looks like a bag lady, though. And to which she responded, totally, I wish he wore more baggy board shorts and a stupid fedora. Come on. Now, is your fedora stupid? Because I think that we clearly know that it is not a stupid fedora.
Right. I did not even, yes, I saw that, did not even deign to respond, I think, right? Did I
did I write back like,
my fedora is not stupid or... But he does look like a bag lady. I mean, I was talking about a shot of him where he looked like a, you know, a... Well, that's what he looked like.
And then
a beard. A bearded bag lady, and that's very sad.
Yeah.
Very sad.
It is sad if you say
okay,
that.
Okay, so, but she said, well, he should wear a stupid hat. Come on. Okay, yeah, then what happened?
Okay, so then now last night, then you tweeted, Tyson's hair looks like my Aunt Martha in 1970.
He did it, you know, all my comments, well, first off, I said he was bizarre because he was behaving very bizarrely. You know, he was drinking the stuff and he was obviously having fun. Listen, Tyson's obviously playing a great game. He's a funny, smart guy. I don't know him at all, but he was intentionally being bizarre, and I said so. Then she picked a fight with me and my wife. I decided to say, am I insulted or not? And last night, he had his hair up. Did you see him in Tribal Council? I wish I had a picture of it. He had his hair up in some bizarre muffin-like or bun-like bun. So that reminded me of my Aunt Martha, and I realized not today. It reminded me of her in about 1970, which is what I wrote.
Yeah,
then
and,
she wrote.
Yeah, your Aunt Martha looks like Tyson's hair?
Yeah. Oh, because I dropped the apostrophe S. Here she is busting me for my grammar, but okay, yeah.
See,
so I said something like, yeah, but actually my Aunt Martha's better looking.
Yeah, yes, you're right. She looks better, and use the hashtag, what does Tyson's hair look like?
Okay, well, that's now the question. So what do you think his hair looks like?
You know, I never thought about Tyson's hair that much this season. You know, I always thought Tyson has very nice hair, but I never I never thought about it as whether or not it looks like a bag lady or anything like that, but I will now give it a second look now that you've called my attention to
Well, now that you go back to that shot in that episode, and you'll see him, I remember it very clearly. He had his buff up on his head, and his hair was sort of hanging down in this straggly way. He may have had a bag in front of him or just his palm out in some way looking for coins.
Change,
but, but it was certainly bag lady-esque. But to hear that I'm actually in a feud with this person is not what I want to be, because I don't think it's that interesting. You know, I'm not here to slam Tyson, although I think he was being pretty funny the other day.
Yes, you've been very complimentary of Tyson so far.
Yeah,
his hair.
It's funny, but and I don't really think Rachel is wants to be in a feud with me about Tyson. I mean, I don't really play that way.
Yeah.
I wish her only the best. Go be happy, Rachel.
Now, would you come back for a Penner versus Rachel season?
Oh, absolutely. Well, that's a John versus... I think it's got to be J's versus R's.
Okay, so she can...
You know?
So this would add fuel to the fire if she's on the team... the team that starts with R.
You got to work with her. And the tricky thing is, of course, she and I would probably get along great.
Yeah.
She obviously has a sense of humor.
Yeah.
She likes to mix it up a little bit, and she's with Tyson, so she's got to have a sense of humor. You know, so we'd probably get along great.
Yeah, I'll put in a good word for you, in pre-merge, and then by the time we get to the merge, and this will all be smoothed over.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah. Okay. So this is interesting to follow, and I hope that we can have peace in the Survivor Twitterverse.
Well, this is certainly not a war. I mean, you know, not that I'm interested in being in a war with anybody. But, you know, my God, worrying about Tyson's hair is certainly nothing for anybody to get into it. Tiff about.
Now, did Otis write back to you and thank you for the compliment on his hair?
No.
He's good hair people.
But you know, I don't know. He also didn't write back and say how nice my wife is.
Yeah, well, that's true.
You know, which I think would have been fair. Though equally as bizarre as having Rachel talk about my wife when I talked about Tyson.
But if somebody wrote how I had nice hair on Twitter, I would be all over that. Oh, thank you so much.
How can you have, I mean, not you, him. He looks like a effing model out there.
Very
with his hair all to the side, all perfect. How does that work?
I don't know. Very, very handsome man, that Otis. All right, a couple more questions. Nathan Bayless wants to know, who from this season needs to be told that's bollocks and you know it?
I guess it's Candace. She's already heard that. That's bollocks and you know it. Oh, I maybe Tyson and you know, the way that he's playing. See, if I was Aris, I would have said, you know, what you're pulling here is a lot of bullshit, and I'm not sure where you're coming from, but I don't like it. And if you're really with me, then you can't be throwing me under the bus like this.
Yeah. Okay.
And your girlfriend, Donna.
That was some Twitter bollocks. Hashtag bollocks.
Twitter bollocks, and you know it.
Matthew Wojcicki wants to know, do you feel like that Culpepper really earned the right to be referred to as his last name? Did he enter the pantheon of last name survivors?
I don't know how that works. Who knows what goes on in the mind of Jeff Probst and how he decides which of us are lucky or unlucky enough to be known by our last names. I just don't know. You know, he looked at me and I just was never a Jonathan or wasn't a Jonathan most of the time. I was Penner.
Yeah.
And, you know, that guy wasn't Brad. He was Culpepper. I'm sure he called him Brad a couple of times. But as I've said, you know, I think the guy is probably not human at this point. I mean, clearly he's got some artificial automaton parts that keep him so youthful, or he's got a picture in the attic somewhere. He may have been replaced by a replicant. Because
if you
look at pictures of him for the past 15 years, the man does not change.
Yeah.
I don't even know if his hair grows at this point. Maybe it's a wig. I don't know. You know, he does not age. It's freakish. So who can explain the ways of Probst?
Like Lost. Yeah. Eric Euxelanian wants to know, who are this year's oxen being led to the final tribal council slaughter? Yes, who are the oxen?
That's a good one. If Hayden takes Tyson and Jervis, or no, if Hayden, yeah, that's a tough final three, and I don't think it's going to work out that way, right? But if Hayden takes, Monica and Caleb, and has somehow been able to convince them that the three of them are tight, you know, he would be able to say, you guys, there's no contest about what's going on here and who deserves to be here. And Monica would have an argument about that. She might win. I'm spitballing here, but it's that kind of a thing where Mike and, you know, look, love Mike, love Lisa. Mike really believed that he deserved to win.
Still does.
Still does.
Yeah.
You know, that he... the number of challenges that he won or that they won or the number of times that blah, 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 and the way that he played, that he deserved to win and that Denise didn't. And, and that's what I tried to explain was you are absolutely incorrect about that. Absolutely wrong. And that's why I used the analogy that I did.
Yeah. Lance Darnell wants to know, I must ask the obligatory question of... what are the best films of 2013? Now, it feels like this is around the time of year that we've talked to you the last couple of years, and you've given us some the top films of the year. Do you have the top films of 2013 or the Penner endorsed films you've enjoyed the most?
Well, I haven't seen all of the, you know, there's a bunch of big films just opening or about to open that, you know, certainly 12 Years a Slave people are saying incredible things about. I can't wait to see it, and I'm going to see it this weekend. I thought Gravity was pretty amazing piece of filmmaking. I'm sorry the Monument Men is getting pushed off to next year. There's a new Scorsese film called The Wolf of Wall Street that's going to open. I've been waiting for the Stephen Chow film Journey to the West. He's one of my favorite filmmakers. I'm hoping that's going to open before the end of the year. A number of people have been kind to link me to pirated versions of it online, but I really want to see it on a big screen. I saw a film that I loved that I assume will be in the hunt for the best documentary category called Stories We Tell. It was made by an actress and a writer-director named Sarah Polley from Canada. It's a wonderful movie. It's a little long. It's probably 5 minutes too long, but if you get a chance, check that out. That's enough off the top of my head. I don't know. What did you like?
Oh, you know, I really haven't seen very much this year. I'm the worst person to ask. I watch so much more TV, and I don't see nearly as many movies as I should. So I'm very able to making up words to talk about movies.
Okay, I'm sorry I asked you because you're underable.
Yes, I'm sorry. I could talk about TV shows, but not so much about the movies.
Been a great year for TV too. All right, keep going.
Yes. Somebody had a question about, are you watching Cochran's new show, The Millers?
I haven't been. I'd love to hear that it's Cochran's show. I know he's worked on the show.
Sure, he was there.
How much of it's his show? He's working with a friend of mine named Bob Daly over there. I guess they're doing well. They've got picked up for a full season, but I must confess I have not seen the show. Is it funny?
Yeah, well, it depends what you're into. If you like the, like, Two and a Half Men, the CBS multicam sitcoms, then you will like The Millers.
Okay. Well, I'll have to check it out. I haven't seen it, but I think it's fantastic for Cochran to come out of Harvard Law School and step into a, obviously, successful start of a TV writing career. It's amazing and wonderful. I'm happy and proud of him.
Yeah. All right. Well, you guys all have so much to talk about on Survivor Robs versus Johns.
Yeah, exactly. Him and me.
All right. Well, Penner, thank you so much for coming on with us. That was absolutely fantastic. Lots of fun. Are you happy? I did not do any Penner impressions the entire time.
Would you?
Would I?
You know how I feel about your impression.
No,
but I hated to scare you off. But let me ask you this. Have you done your Penner impression elsewhere?
Do you
do it on other podcasts?
You know, I do it a little bit only when we do, like, we talk about, hey, what Survivor said what on Twitter, and I feel like I'm compelled to do it, but I don't do it. I feel like there was like a 3-week period in 2012 where I did it really well, and now I feel like I really I do it so badly now that maybe you got in my head that I just don't. If you were back on the show and I was hearing you week after week, I feel like I could do it again. But I feel like it's so bad. I'm not doing you justice anymore.
I do appreciate that you're striving for quality and don't want to serve both of us ill. So thank you for not doing it. But if you want to do it, I do want to hear it.
Yeah.
You want to read one of my tweets in
no,
my
no,
voice?
No, I can't. I'm underprepared.
Okay.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Yes.
I didn't mean to put you on the spot.
Yes. yeah. What did I say before? I'm underused. Whatever I said before, that would apply to this.
Underable.
I'm underable to do it.
New favorite word.
Yeah. So thank you so much, Penner. We appreciate always hearing from you. It's always a lot of fun.
You are welcome. I had a ball always. Look forward to the next one, and keep on trucking, man. Enjoy the season, okay?
Yeah, and if I don't
see you out there. R's versus J's.
Yes. See you later.
You and me, we're on the same team, pal.
All right. Take care, Penner. Bye.
Be well. Cheers, everybody. Bye.
All right, everybody, there you have it. That was Jonathan Penner. Great, as usual, here on Rob Has a Podcast. In just a minute, we're going to talk with Sarah Freeman and get into all of your voicemails and everything else about the episode. But first, I mentioned at the top of the show, we always appreciate it when you use our links for Amazon.com. And it's starting to be that time of year where everybody's starting to think about holiday gifts and what to get everybody. So I just wanted to put it out there. If you're going to do your holiday shopping online, Amazon.com is the place. You get the best deals on everything and all the great shipping rates as well on Amazon. And of course, we always appreciate it when you use our link to start your shopping. RobHasAWebsite.com/Amazon, or when you click on the banner for Amazon at the top of the sidebar on RobHasAWebsite.com, or when you're doing your shopping and you stop to think of us, we always appreciate it. All right, so as we've been doing all season long, we have a special guest with us here to listen to your voicemails and talk about the episode from this week. And we're going to be joined by another one of the bloggers from RobHasAWebsite.com. She writes the Individual Games blog, which is only like 10 million words every week about the episode. And here she is back on the podcast. Here is Sarah Freeman. Sarah, how are you?
Hello. Not 10 million words.
How many words? How many words is your average blog?
It's about 4,000.
4,000.
It might be shorter this week, because I don't think there was much to say after last week.
Okay. And what Sarah does, which is a really great job, is she looks at the game from a lot of different players' perspectives, and she incorporates the secret scenes as well as what people say in the exit interviews and stuff that we talk about on the podcast. And, you know, I always appreciate it when the bloggers incorporate the podcast into their blog, because I feel like it's something that is, you know, organic from this website and could not appear on another website. So I do appreciate that.
I like the fact that we can incorporate the stuff from the interviews and things, which obviously you don't get the chance to do on something like the Know-It-Alls. So it's nice sort of writing about things more after the fact.
Yes. Well, Sarah, great job as usual. And you always get a lot of comments on your blog. So there's definitely a lot of people who want to are waiting to hear what you have to say about the episode each week, and now they get to hear it a little quicker.
Yes.
So let's you want to where do you want to start? I know that you were interested in adding to the discussion that we started about Linda Holmes over the weekend, talking about whether or not Survivor has a sexism problem. Do you want to talk about that, or you want to talk about the episode?
Let's do the sexism stuff first, and then we'll go on to the episode, because that's probably what the voicemails will be more along the lines of.
Okay.
And for that, if you don't mind, I'd actually like to put you on the spot.
Uh-oh. Okay. All right.
Ask you a question. Who is on the RHAP Mount Rushmore?
I would have to say at this point in time that the Mount Rushmore would be, certainly Steven. I think you have to put Tyson and Otis there, and then I think it's that fourth spot. I think is the question mark. I think if you wanted to keep it all Survivor, I think that's maybe you got to put Penner there at this point. or
he was good, was it?
Yeah, he was good. And if you want to open it up to Big Brother, I think then you know, Ian Terry or Matt Hoffman have to enter the conversation. What are you saying, that we don't have enough women on the Mount Rushmore of Rob as a podcast?
That was kind of my point. Not that you don't have enough women, just that you don't have women. Mm-hmm. And it's an unfair question.
Yeah.
But well, it's sort of looking at, well, why is that? And
yes.
I would suggest that that is because you're male, mm-hmm. and therefore you generally get a better rapport with the people close to your demographic. So
yeah.
They're going to be male. They're also going to be mostly similar age, similar sense of humor, that kind of thing.
Right. I find that there are, you know, I have a lot of fun with female guests. I find...
Well, Nicole, obviously, is somebody who you always have a great rapport with.
Yes. But I find for the kinds of people that typically come on the show many, many times, who are very, you know, typically are very silly. Like, I find that there are not too many women who are bending over backwards to talk to me for hours on end on the podcast. Like, I find that, and maybe I'm wrong. And we have a lot of Erin Lobdell has been a recurring guest, and Sophie is great, and Kim is great. But I find that more often than not, women have like better things to do than talk nonsense with me for hours on end.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's just going to work both ways, I'm sure. But I do think that this is just sort of goes back to the people saying people talk about Jeff Probst types. They say he's sexist. And, you know, it's not so much sexism. It's just a natural bias, you know, so your best guests and most of your co-hosts, they tend to be male, which isn't, so you do have plenty of female guests, which I do really appreciate.
Yeah.
But I think because you're male, there's that gender bias coming through, which is totally inadvertent, and it's not sexism, it's just a bias. And that's what was going on a lot in the comments, people arguing about whether or not Jeff or any particular incident mentioned in the podcast is in fact intentionally sexist. And that's really not the point, because there's been some studies about this. There's a website, cjane.org, which is the Gina Davis Institute for Gender Bias in Media, or Gender in Media. And it's, you know, it just leads to this, it's how at every stage of the production process, you used to get this underrepresentation of women, which then has this knock-on effect. So I used you just as a comparison that all our listeners will be familiar with. Mm-hmm. But then if you take that to Survivor, you've got Jeff Probst, who tends to like, you know, that type of the certain athletic male type of player. Mm-hmm. And then that sort of then knocks on to, you've got the editor's bias, who also seem to pick up on those particular male storylines. And then it goes out even to the media. So you've got like Gordon Holmes and Dalton Ross, probably again being more interested in the male storylines and the female storylines.
Well, no, actually, those two guys are actually very sexist. Gordon Holmes. That's well known. That's established.
Okay. And then that actually then becomes a fan bias. That's where you suddenly get this sort of perception that there are no memorable women in Survivor. And it's just because that's being reinforced at every level. And it just becomes this cascade of involuntary sexism.
Yeah. I don't think that there's anybody that's associated with Survivor that has, you know, an anti-female agenda. Yeah. And so I think that definitely the show has things that it can improve on, but I don't think that, you know, Jeff Probst is looking to keep women down on Survivor or anything like that.
Exactly. And I think scapegoating Jeff is not helping the problem, and it's actually hurting progress, because so much time is wasted over arguing, oh, is this sexist or is this not? And that's not the point. The point, I mean, even if the intent is not sexist, but the end result is marginalization of women, then it's still a problem. It's a case of, you know, you can't say the means justify the end. So, there's no clear solution, but I'm just, it's something I want to sort of raise awareness of, all these, so some people saying, look, nobody's being sexist, but there's still a problem there. I know I always get annoyed by the fact that we're not seeing more female storylines. Like this season, I was so excited to see these four older women on a tribe together and see the dynamic of that. But of course, we hardly ever saw Tina, the Loras, and Monica until they started getting voted off. And then it was a case of, we're going to highlight them for this one episode before they go home.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah. Do you think that speaks to that they are just not as good at telling their own story? Or do you think that that was more just not the story they want to tell?
I think it's just, it's not a story that inherently interests. I mean, I don't actually know who's working production, but just from usual statistics in the industry, I'm guessing it's mostly men, if not exclusively men. And I think they're just not inherently interested in the story. Mm-hmm. So they don't that it's harder for them to say, oh, actually, we've got a viewing demographic here who would be fascinated by this, because they're obviously looking at it from their perspective.
Yeah, when I played on Survivor, the Amazon, there were four field producers who were in charge of each of the, you know, crafting the episodes. And so they would switch out the field producers every 3 days. And there were two that worked with the Tombaki side, and there were two that worked on the other side. So out of those four field producers, one of them was a woman, and that was 10 years ago. I don't know if it's, you know, what the balance is now, but also coincidentally, one of those field producers then was involved in a very famous murder investigation over the last couple of years, which was the subject of a Dateline NBC report and all sorts of that stuff. But the other people, everybody else is a fine, upstanding citizen, and one of them was a woman.
Okay. Are these the people who do the confessionals?
Yeah, so you would the field producer would, you know, ask you the questions and sort of monitor what was going on, and they're sort of like in charge of the episode through post production. On Survivor All Stars, I want to say that one of the field producers was a woman also, but we had this a couple people that were with us, but I think there was a woman, but I don't think I was around long enough to work with her.
Okay. That's actually something that would be really interesting to find out, just but who I do the think, field producers are these days.
And yeah.
Also, I'd love to know who does the editing.
Yeah.
Who's in charge of that?
I think there's actually a lot of turnover in the field producers on Survivor. Like I did Survivor 6, there was still like the old guard of a few people that had been there since, you know, way back. You know, one of the field producers, you know, had been there since the beginning, and a lot of them had been there for a while. But now I kind of think that there's been certainly a lot of turnover, over the years. You know, people gain experience and they say, hey, you know, I don't want to go, you know, I sort of like, you know, it's a good job to cut your teeth on. But then, you know, people, you know, they get older, they have families, they don't want to be away for as long, and they end up getting jobs that, you know, are more within the continental United States.
Yeah. Okay.
So let's segue into the discussion from the episode this week before we get into any of the voicemails. And I know that you always look at the game from a lot of different people's perspectives. Is there anybody that particularly interests you this week of where they are at position wise in the game?
I like Jervis and Monica. Jervis is interesting because all of a sudden we get Aris telling us that he's the guy who he absolutely trusts, and he's his sort of like failsafe. So he's almost in the Siri role, I think, this time. But it's also sounded really like that was all pre-game alliance stuff as well, which they didn't ever said it quite on episode, but that was really how it came across. So
yeah. And Jervis even said when he voted for Otis, he said, hey, you're my boy, but hey, this is the game. And so I think that they're, you know, that's the problem with, you know, if you play the game with people, you know, who you are, you know, friendly with from before, that it's a problem because you never see it coming when you leave yourself very vulnerable.
Yeah. I also wonder how many people just thought Jervis wouldn't do that because he was old school. And I love the way Jervis is playing for an old school survivor player. Who would have seen that coming?
Yeah.
I didn't.
And yeah, Otis didn't either. Yeah. What about anybody? You know, we were talking about with Penner, the game from the perspective of, some of the other people like Hayden and Caleb. Where do you think that their head is at moving forward now?
With Caleb, it's so tough because, you know, I think the editors hate him more than they hate Katie. It's really, he never gets to say anything. I don't know if he's just keeping his head down and not saying anything because that's his kind of personality. You know, he's obviously engaged to Colton. He's used to letting people have their business or whatever and then just stepping in when he needs to, probably.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of guessing Caleb is just watching things, and if he doesn't have to do anything, he's not doing anything. And Hayden, I'm sure Hayden has a plan, and it's kind of difficult to see where he's fitting in at the moment. I think he's got to try and rally the loved ones at some point, so he thinks he can overturn Tyson and Jervis when it comes time for that.
Yeah. Can we go back to Caleb? And I think you brought up a good point of, do the editors hate Caleb? And I wonder if Caleb is just not saying anything to anybody. I mean, let's go back to that tribal council where he voted out Brad Culpepper. Do you think that he knew what he was going to do and he didn't tell anybody from production ahead of time before? It seemed like he didn't tell anybody, like even the other people. And I wonder if production appreciates that, in that, you know, I think production would like it if you were a person that said, hey, I'm going to do something crazy at tribal council. I'm not going to tell anybody in my tribe when I do it. But I think production would want that heads up of what you're going to do. And I think that what Caleb did by doing what he did without even giving a heads up to the production, I wonder if that's just a clue into the fact that he's probably not saying anything to production.
Yeah, well, apparently he's always maintained to everybody who asked that it was entirely spontaneous. He just suddenly came up with it and decided to do it. Mm-hmm. So maybe that's just how he works. He's not really, maybe he just give very calm confessionals. He's not sort of saying what he's doing about anything. He just decides, okay, this is what I need to do now, and does it.
Yeah. The only confessional I can even remember him having this season was in the episode following that, where like Vetus was talking to him on the boat and he was just talking, and he had a confessional where he said, I believe the term is big kahunes. And I was like, is he saying that he has big cojones, or is he saying that he's the big kahuna? That's the only thing I remember him saying the whole season.
Yeah, I'm just checking what his secret scene was because I couldn't remember this week because I take notes on them. And yeah, he's basically was talking about the immunity challenge, saying he would have liked immunity, but he's not good at memory and this way doesn't seem like a threat. And that's really all he said. So I think he's just not one for talking about things.
Yeah. So, all right.
Knows what he's doing, but can't articulate it or doesn't articulate it.
Okay, well, let's jump into some of these voicemails because we have a lot of ground to cover. And let's start with Michelle, who has a voicemail about a very similar subject that we're talking about. So here's Michelle. Here we go.
Hey, Rob, it's Michelle from Long Island. As Tyson said last night, there's a whole bunch of different ways to cut this pie. Well, not including Aris on Redemption Island, we're left with 5 men and 5 women. We're also left with 5 returning players, and 5 loved ones. Do you think this means there's an even playing field for anybody to win this game, or do certain players still have a distinct advantage to winning? Love to hear your thoughts. Bye.
All right, so this is like what we're talking about with the individual games here. So do you think that either of the other scenarios that she outlined here could unfold? Do you think we could see returning players versus not returning players?
At some point, probably not yet.
Yeah.
I think there's going to be a mix of them for a good long while.
Not with Tina and Katie and Laura and Sierra in the mix. I don't see at any point, Laura and Tina turning on their daughter saying, hey, it's veterans versus rookies.
Yeah. I think probably people are going to make final three deals. I could see like Hayden, Caleb, and Sierra saying us three to the end, right? We don't want a returner to get it.
How about men versus women? Do you think we could see that dynamic unfold?
No. I stop thinking about women's alliances. I hate women's alliances. I hate any reference to it. It's not going to happen with this group because there's no... You know, I always say it's too limited a way to choose your alliance.
Mm-hmm.
Tyson was saying at Tribal Council, the five guys could get to, or six guys could get together, but he knew that wasn't going to happen because he wasn't going to let Aris in. And I can't think of anybody in the game who would say, oh, well, let's go all girls now, or let's go all guys now.
Yeah, well, I think that Tina really screwed that up with Monica. I feel like
yeah,
Monica might have been into it.
Surprising.
And then after that, hey, you'll be the five. And even if Tina and Katie were to pair up with Laura and Sierra and say, hey, let's work together. We're the only pairs. Let's bring in Monica. Monica's like, wait, so I'm the five still? So it's really not an ideal situation. How bad do you think that Tina screwed up there last night?
It was weird because I know people have said that being the five within two groups with two pairs is actually a really good position. And maybe that's what Tina was thinking when she said it. But what Monica would expect Tina to be offering her is a final three deal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's we're going to go in as a five and then you, me and Katie are the final three, which... Obviously, Tina can't say when Vitas is standing right there, but she should have absolutely been pulling Monica off lately and going, we're three, we're the final three.
Yeah.
And I think when Monica maybe assumed that was going to be the case, and then Tina going, oh, you'll be five, made her think, oh, and maybe that's what pushed her away. But yeah, that was just a really weird thing to say. And I'm sure it's one of those things where she didn't even realize what she was saying. It probably watched it on the episode and thought, ooh.
Yeah. Is this sort of maybe just old school thinking from Tina? Because, you know, like Tina, let's say she's got Katie and she's got Vitas and Otis. And, you know, way back in Survivor 2, if she's telling Elizabeth Hasselbeck and Kentucky Joe, hey, you guys are going to be 4 and 5 here with me and Colby and Keith. And they're like, all right. Yeah. Thank you, Tina. Oh, that's fantastic news.
That might be it as well. And Tina's been very open about the fact that she doesn't like thinking too far ahead. She prefers to sort of concentrate on the here and now. So, you know, she might also be thinking, just because I've said five, that doesn't mean that's where you're ending up.
Mm-hmm. So back to the original question from Michelle, which was, do you think that this is anybody's game? So let me ask you, forget about Otis on Redemption Island. 10 players left in the game. Is there anyone that you think that we can rule out here on day, whatever it is, day 20, day 21? Who can we cross off? Who cannot win the game?
Okay, I'll say it's going to be either Tina or Katie, depending on which one gets voted off, which is most likely Tina, just because there's no way they're going to win their way back from Redemption Island. I can't see now the pairs being able to rally together and combat the others. So, yeah, one of Tina and Katie and one of Laura Sierra is going to get voted off. And Laura might be able to pull coming back from Redemption again, but the others aren't.
So who could we eliminate? Who is that we're saying right now is DOA? They cannot win the game at all.
Tina.
I want names. Tina. Tina is out.
Yeah. I would be very surprised if Vitas lasts, and he's not really got the skill set, I think, to go on the immunity run. There'll be something that favors the bigger guys at some point. So
if you're ruling out Tina, can we rule out Katie also? Katie can't win the game.
Yeah, I think she can't win the game. She'd have to really scramble. So, yeah, she's out. I think it's going to be one of the ones from Tyson's group.
One of the seven. So you're going to include Laura and Sierra in the mix.
I'm a bit iffy about Laura just because And I'm probably getting influenced by the Iris Blind Side, which was talked about so much and then happened without anything really sort of interfering with that. And now we've got this sort of strong setup for a Laura Moret Blind Side at the hands of her daughter, no less, that I'm wondering if that's going to be the next storyline, and that will also happen like the Iris one did. So
okay.
I will write Laura Moret off as well.
All right. So you think that this game is down to six players, which are Sierra, Caleb, Hayden, Monica, Jervis, Tyson. One of these six people will be your winner.
Yeah, there we go. That could be where we'll get the power struggle between the returners and the new people.
Okay. Well, let's go out to Dan, and he has got a question about what is to come at Redemption Island. Here's Dan.
Hey, Rob. Dan from Sydney here. Quick red-eye question going forward. Jewels or Truels?
Okay, so what do we think here, Sarah? Are we going with two-person battles or three-person battles here the rest of the way on Redemption Island?
Well, if it's a three-person battle, they're either... Actually, they often do that, don't they? They do a double elimination following the merge episode.
Mm-hmm.
So if it's going to be a double elimination next week, then it'll be a Truel, won't it? I think they'll probably go back to the Truels. They seem to like that because it keeps... It becomes a little more fair in the challenges. If you get one that doesn't suit you so much, you can still, you know, you've just got to beat one person
through. You think this week coming up will be a double elimination?
I'm going to go out on a limb and say that, yeah.
I didn't think of that, but I was going to say it's going to be like 2 weeks before we see Otis again here and we have no exit interviews.
Yeah.
It'll make me very sad. No, I like the exit interviews. We'll see. I feel like duels might be more fun. Like, I feel like to have it three and then get down to two after the merge, that might be good. I didn't like it on, you know, it makes it not that much fun to talk about the show when we're talking about, like, okay, here are the players that are in the game. Then there's also three players who are out of the game. So yeah. I feel like...
I just wish a lot of people said, why didn't they just drop Redemption Island at the merge? And I wish that. It would have been.
Yeah,
I think they've done their bit of Redemption Island now.
But. Just going back to the history of Redemption Island. So in Survivor Redemption Island, then they went to Truels after the merge on Survivor, the original Redemption Island, and then in Survivor South Pacific, then it was only duels, and there were no Truels on Redemption Island. Is that correct? Am I remembering that?
They had two Truels at the start, I think, but it was a case of only winner advances, so two people would go home.
Okay.
I remember Dawn and Whitney were definitely in the same challenge together, and I think Jim and Keith were as well.
Okay. So then, and then we got down to it. It was only two. I remember, like, it was Ozzy versus Cochran, and that was a two-person battle.
Yeah, and Ozzy versus Edna as well, which was
surprisingly
close.
Yes. All right.
It was worst challenge competitors who gave Ozzy his most
difficult Ozzy is like the tortoise and the hare. It's like, you know, he's like, oh, it's Cochran. Let me go take a nap. I'll come back in 20
that
minutes.
That was what it was.
Yeah. All right. So here is Catherine, and she wants to talk about Vetus and his social game. Here's Catherine.
Hi, Rob. This is Kat from Vancouver, and I was just wondering if you thought Vetus has played a strong enough social game to save him from the next vote. Connections with Hayden and Caleb, Sierra, and Monica. Thanks.
Okay, so other than win immunity, do you see a plan of survival for Vetus here?
I think he has played a strong social game, but I think all of those people know he's a threat. So it's like, yeah, we like you, we respect you, and that's why we're voting you out. So, he's not got a chance.
He has a good relationship with Hayden and Caleb and Laura. So that would be four if he could somehow reconnect with those guys. Is there any, do you see any scenario where she has a good relationship with Hayden, Caleb, and Sierra plus Laura somehow, that would be five. If they could just swing one other person over, the issue would
have Tina and Katie, couldn't they? So.
But the issue then becomes now there's a group of seven, and for Hayden and Caleb and Laura and Sierra, is this a lateral move for these guys? And I
don't see, I mean, I could be wrong, but I think everyone's just made a big move and they're probably like looking to, okay, let's do something more straightforward now rather than risk another changeover.
Yeah. And the problem for Vetus is just going to be, hey, if I'm making a lateral move, I'm losing because I'm screwing over three people to make a lateral move.
That too.
So that's, it makes no sense to make a lateral move in the post-merge Survivor.
Yeah,
or there's seldom a time.
Nobody's going to want to go to the end with him, because if he survives after that start to the merge, then he's going to win at the end, isn't he? So, yes.
So our advice to Vetus is win immunity next week.
Yep,
that's our advice. All right,
that's our advice. Yeah,
sound advice from Survivor experts. Okay, so here's from here's Brent, and he'd like to talk about hidden immunity idols. Here's Brent.
Hey Rob, it's Brent Purvis calling from Hamilton, Ontario in Canada. My question is regarding the hidden immunity idol. Do you think it would be more exciting for the show if they chose not to show who actually found it? That way at Tribal Council, it wouldn't only surprise the remaining players, but would also surprise the audience. Just looking for your thoughts on this. Good luck on the podcast awards, and keep up the good work.
All right, so... I know, have they ever done this before, Sarah, where we don't know if somebody has the idol or not?
I haven't seen Guatemala. That was the one before I started watching. But I thought that in that one, we didn't know. I don't know who found it, but we didn't know they found it until they played it.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and Amanda in Fans versus Favorites, we knew she was looking for it.
Yeah.
But no, she, I think they might have done that a few times.
Yeah, I feel like if it's in the same episode, I wouldn't mind if they did it. Like, for instance, like last season where Malcolm like went out to the woods and was like, oh my God, I gotta find that idol. And like, let's say hypothetically he found it, but they didn't show us him finding it on screen. I think that would be exciting. But I feel like if it's somebody like Tyson and he's not gonna play it that week, I think we need to know.
Yeah, I'd agree with that, because it's then seeing how the person who isn't in danger uses it.
Mm-hmm. And now they've also said on Survivor Redemption Island that the people who were in the game, this is a little different, but they said that Boston Rob had told everybody he had the hidden immunity idol earlier, and I don't know if they ever showed that on the show, but basically they had said that, well, we looked stupid because we never made a move on Rob, but he had shown us, hey, I have the idol the whole time, so that's why we didn't ever try to vote him out.
Yeah, I think Andrea was the only person he didn't show, and that was why she couldn't get anybody to switch when she came back into the game, because they all knew he had that idol, which I think was still good for that final tribal council or something. So
yeah. Okay. Well, so how about this? Okay. So speaking of the Rob that doesn't suck, we have a question concerning him, and let's go out to Matteo von Podfelder. Here's Matteo.
What's up, Rob C and Sarah F? Matteo von Podfelder here. I just had two things to say. First, just a side note. I don't know if you noticed, Rob, but Tina does distinctly refer to him as Otis in the first few minutes of this latest episode.
Woohoo.
So a little redemption there for Team Rob, I think. But my question for you guys today is about Tyson. Like everyone else, I'm impressed by his game this year. He's finally killing it. What I want to know is, did he get his newfound Survivor superpowers from playing with Boston Rob? I mean, it seems like Rob's got the golden touch here. Anyone who's played with him in his last two seasons comes back a much more ruthless, strategic version of themselves. You got Coach, you got Philip Shepard, you got Andrew Baliki, and now you got Tyson. It's uncanny. We need to be talking about it. So I guess my question for you guys is Tyson playing by the BR rules?
All right. This is a very interesting question from Matteo. Thank you for a great question. So, Sarah, do you think, is Tyson playing the BR rules?
I've forgotten the BR rules, and I did not buy the rule book.
Oh, well, I have my copy here. Hold on. Let me grab it.
You keep it ever to hand, do you? Just in case.
I didn't keep it handy. I don't know where they are. I have to go find my copy of the BR rules.
Well, I know it's something about your family first, then your alliance, and vote off your alliance before they vote you off. Something like that.
Yes, BR rules. All right. So is Tyson influenced by Boston Rob? Let's go down the checklist here. All right. So Tyson, well, let's just go before then. Okay, so of the people that have come back and played the game, okay, so now unfortunately the same can't be said for Russell, who played with Boston Rob and did not come back with superpowers. Then we have who's the next person to come back? Then Coach comes back after he played with Boston Rob, plays his best game of the three, ends up unfortunately losing for Coach. Then we have Survivor 24, no returning players. On Survivor 25, that's Penner, who never played with Boston Rob, and that's Russell Swan and Scoopin, he never played with them, so throw that out the window. Okay, so now we have Philip on Survivor 26, who comes back, and do we have to say that Philip, even though Philip 1.0 made the finals, would you say Philip 2.0 played a better game?
I think I could agree with that. Okay. I mean, he did actually stand a shot of winning had he made the end. And, of course, he went out through a really bizarre circumstance. So yeah. I don't think he would have won the game, but, you know, you can't really say that he went out through his own mistakes either.
All right, now here comes Tyson now, who played with Boston Rob.
Francesca.
Oh, and Francesca, who played, you know, well, she played about the same. She did not have a long enough exposure to Boston Rob, unfortunately. Andrea Baliki as well.
She played a great game. I really liked her game.
Very cutthroat. And so now here comes Tyson, now who looks like he's in the catbird seat right now. Would you agree?
Yeah. Obviously it remains to be seen. Now he's inherited the alpha male mantle, but he's got an idol, he's got an alliance, and he's got multiple bonds within that alliance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And actually, so thinking back to the Boston Rob rules, as I said, you know, it's family first, and obviously he's had his sort of bond with Rachel. He's made his alliance, and he's broken it before they betray you, and he voted Aris off, and from the pecking order that Tina was outlining, Tyson would have been out seventh, so, you know, good call.
And speaking to the, you know, the family first, yes, there happens to be family on this, but I think, you know, specifically Boston Rob, what he means is like, you know, you might make a friend.
I think a lot of people have said that, you know, having Rachel there and having that moment with Rachel has sort of helped focus Tyson.
Yeah.
So, you know, maybe we can credit Rachel's presence with getting Tyson's attention actually on the game and trying to win.
Yeah, and much like Boston, you know, put your family first, like Tyson might love Otis. Tyson might think Otis is the greatest guy in the world. You know, he wants to be friends with him for life. Just like the same way Boston Rob probably really enjoyed Grant's company. But at the end of the day, it's about the people back home. And if Grant never speaks to me again the rest of my life, I have to risk that because I have to bring this money home for my family. And I think that we can confirm Tyson is playing the BR rules.
Yep, I think you're right.
All right, now more importantly, Sarah. Okay, now let's talk about something real. Now, what does this say about the prospects of somebody else who last played Survivor with Boston Rob returning to the game? What about somebody from Survivor All-Stars, if they were to return from the game, who last played with Boston Rob? Would this be a good a good omen?
Who possesses the Boston Rob rule book is studying it nightly,
I don't know where it is. It's around it's around here somewhere. I do own
Tina.
A copy.
We forgot Tina, although she wasn't the same tribe as well,
she did not was not infected by BR. She didn't she wasn't play closely enough with him.
Yeah.
What about Rupert? Rupert, did he play in Survivor Heroes versus Villains more strategic?
Well, he did that thing where he pretended he found the idol, didn't he?
Okay.
And that's reasonable strategy.
That's something. That's something. Yeah. All right. So interesting. Interesting. Okay. Let's talk about some of the editing this season. And whether or not the editing may be ruining the show for some of our more savvy viewers, like most of the people that are probably listening to closing in on 2 hours of this podcast.
Okay.
Hey, Rob. This is Matt at Lefternov calling. I just want to comment on the Redemption Island challenge from last night, the Get Back in the Game challenge. And I think if the ability to keep a secret makes a good alliance partner in this game. I think CBS is a lousy partner. Because what's the last thing you see before the challenge happens? You see Sierra saying, boy, I'm in a great spot now. I love my alliance and feel I'm in a good position to win. And the worst thing that could happen for me is my mom gets back in the game. Geez, that would be terrible. So cut to the challenge and, gee, how off the suspense there. It's pretty obvious who's going to win. Just wondering what you thought. Bye.
All right, so Sarah, what do you do? You know, you're somebody who studies the show regularly. I mean, when people are saying, boy, the one thing that, you know, if somebody says before the challenge that all we have to do is we just have to make sure that Joey doesn't win immunity because, boy, if that happened, we would be screwed. Like, does that ruin it for you when...
it becomes one of those things that you just sort of get used to doing, oh, well, now we know. I think I would prefer that they didn't show their hand. And I think this season has been particularly bad for it. I mean, that's obviously a prime example, but also just the Aris blind side, which was built up and built up and built up. And there was never any sort of strong sense of an opposition. You know, there never seemed to be any way that he wasn't going home, you know? So
yeah.
The season's been worse than usual for that. Also, we've had a lot of people who are invisible until their boot episode.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And also, I've talked about this a lot. The commercials, too, have been a lot of, it's a season of blindsides. This week, it's another blindside coming up.
I've not been watching them just because I don't like that. I mean, apparently, my husband was telling me one of the promos showed Laura in the tribe. Up for this episode. So they really weren't pretending with the Laura thing. They weren't building suspense up for that at all.
Yeah.
So, I think they need to do a bit of a look at their PR department, look at and think about how much suspense they want to actually cause here, because they're spelling it out pretty well at the moment.
Yeah, I just think that, unfortunately, I think that if they have the opportunity of like, okay, so if there's a chance this promo might bring in a extra 10,000 viewers for the Survivor this week, or we might upset, you know, a core audience of 100,000 people who are really obsessed about this stuff, I think they're going to take whatever the new people are, and you know, we just have to deal with it.
They know we're not going
anywhere.
we're
sticking around. We should be happy that the show is on and still doing well, so we can't complain. All right,
we're just gonna stick around and complain about it, but we're not gonna stop watching it, so
right,
why should they listen?
All right, let's talk to our good friend Taylor Cotter, who is curious about the Merge Beach situation.
Hi Rob, it's Taylor Cotter. Normally at the Merge, Jeff would say something like, oh, we're moving back to the old favorites beach, or you're moving to a new beach. Yesterday they didn't mention anything about it, and Steven said, and I also noticed, that they just moved right back to the old loved ones beach. Seems kind of weird because they didn't win any rewards and they didn't have any luxury items. So I was wondering if they purposely sent the tribe to the Loved Ones Beach, hoping, knowing that he didn't have the two clues to the idol, and hoping that someone would find it. Thanks, Rob.
Okay, so Merge Beach. What do you think about this? Why did we go to... there was very little business of the Merge discussed in the episode. I think we only caught the name of the Merge tribe on the flag. There was no discussion of that. There was also you know, no talk of why we were going to any specific tribe beach. Did you read anything into that?
I missed it. I like that kind of stuff. I don't think it's to do with the idol, because I assumed that the clues worked for both camps, so presumably there was a tree with a snake-like vine in the other one as well, although it's possible that Jeff had different clues depending on who was taking it.
Yeah,
but I think honestly the reason they went to the Tadana Beach is because they can still do the helicopter shots of people meditating up on the cliff. It's more cinematic, that beach, and they've got the waterfall there as well, which I'm sure they like filming people in, although we haven't seen much of that. But
Not much.
Yeah, I think it's just a prettier beach on camera.
Okay. All right, and then let's do one more voicemail. This is from Brian in Indy. All right, here is Brian.
Hey, Rob. It's Brian Bosman from India here again. First things first, I think as incentive for all of us to vote even more for you for podcast awards, we need another Rob Sesternino karaoke remix. It feels like it's been a while since we had the Don's Bread remix, and I think we just need another one.
The bread
kind
shop.
Of get us inspired to go out and vote some more. Now on to the episode, tonight's episode. My question is on the rules of this season. Can loved ones still take each other's spots on Red Eye? I obviously don't see Vetus doing it, but Laura M. might do it for Sierra, and it could cause some interesting things down the road if they were to vote out Sierra in the next few episodes. So I just wanted to see what you thought on that. Love the shows. Talk to you later. Thanks.
All right. So Brian from Indy asks two questions. One, do you think people will still be able to switch at Redemption Island? I don't see any reason why they would not, but I can't imagine why Otis and Vetus would switch places. I could see the moms and the daughters, though.
No, I could see the mothers switching with their daughters, probably not the other way around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so.
I think they've still got that in play because, you know, they want to milk the theme anytime they can. But yeah. I don't think we'll see it. That twist has been a bit of a bust, basically, so
yes.
far.
I think more interesting might be if Otis is able to give immunity idol clues to Vetus.
Yeah, but Vetus can't find the idol now, so
yeah.
That's not going to...
If the idol is found, do you think that will still give a clue away?
Yeah, that's what they normally do, isn't it? Because they can't tell you that they found it, and then they don't get to hide a new idol until the old one's played.
Okay.
Unless they decide to hide a second idol anyway,
just because they can.
The other one wasn't found.
Yeah.
But then if they gave different clues, Vetus is going to know that the other one has been found. So, yeah, I think it's going to be clues to the same idol. Vetus probably will get it, and he's going to be disappointed.
Yeah, last season, what was the business with the hidden immunity idol? I feel like there was a second idol being hid, even though, like, I think people complained of why were they putting more idols into play when Malcolm was on the ropes.
I think there were always only two idols in play at one time, and they kept trying to. But I think you have to play an idol before they will rehide it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what the rule is in the event of one never getting found, though, because I don't think that's happened before.
All right, and then Brian Indy brings up the podcast awards and wants to know, he wants some sort of karaoke song or something to get people fired up to vote for the podcast awards. Now, last season we did have a song of the bread shop where Dawn was going to bake some bread. She already had 20 loaves in the oven. I don't know, does that kind of stuff work?
I can't really say I'd vote more if I heard it, but I think I would like to hear it. So yes, it absolutely works, Rob.
All right, then. Well,
I think you need to get Jessica Lees in on this since she keeps teasing her karaoke.
Yes,
ability.
All right, fine. So if that's for you, here's your long distance dedication, Brian from Indy. Here is to rock the vote. Here we go. Hit it. All right. Yeah, 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 yeah. Why did Tyson screw on us? It was so discourteous just to throw him under the bus. King Otis was dethroned. His name pronunciation's unknown. How does he keep his hair combed? Tundra hats are great when it's cold. He played with Vetus, who's his bro. Yeah. He's on Redemption all alone. Except for maybe a visit from Jeff Probst. We miss you, Otis. Good luck out there. Yeah. Aww. Thank you. Thank you.
He did that for you, Rob. You needed to comfort your friend.
Yeah, I need. He needs.
I can hear the pain in your voice there.
Yes. Yes. So we're supporting you, Otis. Yes. So why did Tyson screw Otis? Very sad. So that's for you, Otis and Brian from Indy. There you go.
Okay.
So sorry you had to sit through that, Sarah.
That was amazing.
That was more than you bargained for.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. So let's talk about some of the and of course those were the voicemails. If you want to get your voicemails into the show, you guys are doing great with length. You know, shoot for like 30 seconds. Go call us up after the episode. Also, if you want to call us for any of the other shows we do, you know, I'm not opposed to getting a voicemail in for Amazing Race or Walking Dead or anything else. 323-282-RHAP. Or you could also leave us a voicemail at robhasawebsite.com/voicemail on your computer. All right. So we talked about a lot with Penner about the controversy between him and Tyson's girlfriend. Have you been following that Twitter feud?
Yes, that's one of my favorite things on Twitter. There wasn't anything on last night. I was disappointed.
No, there was a little bit. There was a little bit that... Yes, Penner had said that Tyson's hair looks like his aunt Mildred or something like that in 1970. So that was very, very ugly incident. his aunt Martha. I'm sorry. Then here we have. Here's some more bad blood on Twitter between the Survivor players. This is from last night. And it started with Kat Ederson. She tweeted, if I hear the word trust from @VetusYoga one more time, I'm going to puke. Can you believe this? And then Vetus, @VetusYoga, retorted at Kat Ederson, unfortunately, you don't understand what this game is about. #GameOfTrust. And then Kat replied to @VetusYoga, 34 days in the game and a returning veteran, 17 days. I'll be okay. XOXO. And then @VetusYoga responded, true, you've played Survivor for a lot longer than me. How many times have you worn the individual immunity necklace? This is getting ugly, Sarah.
It is. That's just a really random thing to say, because I don't think Vetus would normally go in for the... Yeah, the challenges are the important thing.
Yes. Well, that's when survivors are fighting. This is like in the wild. Yes. When they start bringing up individual challenge wins, that's when you know it's getting very petty. It's getting very petty. And then here comes @SierraEaston to say, we should all take lessons from V. He's absolutely the best player to ever play Survivor. Now, that seems a little sarcastic to me.
Yeah, I would agree with that one.
Yeah, so lots of bad blood still between Kat and Vetus.
Yeah, I'm kind of surprised Vetus waded in there because, I mean, no offense to Kat, but it is like fighting with a kitten.
Yes, you know? Cat fight. And so for Vetus, not seeming very much like the Zen master.
No, you're right.
The fight with Kat on Twitter. Yeah.
But Vetus has tended to like to sort of talk about his game on Twitter and talk up his game on Twitter. But to be fair, he ran himself down last night about his overconfidence and what he did wrong. So, I can see why Sierra got a bit sarcastic about the greatest player thing, but Vetus acknowledged his errors.
Yeah. Then from last night, also just a couple other ones. Sophie last night, she tweeted, please, Survivor Otis versus Vetus, where they can't split the money, and if they're both around at the final five, they both automatically lose. So that's what she would like. And then she also tweeted, I feel like that conversation was way too much OMG, I'm in an alliance, join fun, and not enough what's best for us. So I'm not sure which conversation do you think she was talking about?
I think it was just when they were talking to each other and going, oh, we're going to get to the end. We're going to win against anybody. And there's no way we're not going to get there.
So I think she was talking about Otis and Vetus. I thought she might have been talking about Monica and Tyson.
Oh, maybe. I was still sort of focused on the whole Otis and Vetus thing. She seemed to have a bone to pick with them.
Yeah. And then, so then Eliza, also at eOrleans, one of the great Survivor tweeters, she also said, first post-merge vote is always people who are afraid of that. I'm sorry. First post-merge vote is always person people are afraid of in individual challenges, mental and physical. Take it as a compliment at Adas Music. So Eliza says, take this as a compliment to be the first person voted off after the merge. Was Eliza the first person voted off after the merge in Fans versus Favorites?
Yes, okay. She was.
That's, we sussed that one out. So let's go through it a little bit. You want to throw out some people, first people voted off after the merge? Are they always a threat?
It's Corinne last season.
Okay.
Well, that was a threat for a different reason.
Yeah. So. Then we have Miss Survivor, R.C. St. Amour, two seasons ago. Was that because she was a threat? Was that what happened?
She could certainly have won immunity, but I think that was a case of we just want to get rid of her. We want to get rid of her for a while. So Tandang were just desperate to make a move, weren't they?
What about the great Roger Sexton from Survivor the Amazon?
Oh, Rob, you know I haven't seen your season.
What? What?
I told you this before. It's on my list. It's on my list.
All right. Well, that you're in luck, Sarah Freeman, because I just got word that Survivor the Amazon on Amazon.com, they've actually cut the price $18.99 for the DVD set that they released a couple of years back. I think 2 years ago they released it on Amazon. It's now only $18.99 on Amazon. It was over $30 when they first put it out. So the price is cut if you want to pick that up. That seems like a good stocking stuffer there.
Yes. My husband's listening. He's making notes, I'm sure.
Yes.
Yeah. So, it is definitely one of the ones that one and Pearl Island are the ones that I really want to get around to watching. Do you wear plaid in that season, Rob?
No, I don't have any plaid yet in that season. I didn't discover it until the mid 2000s. But yeah,
so how am I going to know it's you?
You'll have to. They put a title underneath me, so you know that it's me.
That's true.
And if you want to go there directly, you can go to of course and support Rob as a podcast. If you go to robasawebsite.com/s6dvd. That'll take you to the page to buy that on Amazon. Let's just do one or two more. Russell Hance last night talks about when Laura was talking about how, hey, we got to make sure we got to split the votes. Otis might have the idol. Russell tweeted, LMFAO, I messed up that woman's mind. Listen to her. Oh, no. and he said, the Russell seed never leaves your mind, Laura. LMAO. He's like Freddy Krueger. Yeah.
I can't believe he managed to find a reason to say Russell seed again. I was so sick of that phrase for such a long time.
Yeah.
I saw somebody say, I can't remember who it was now. It's probably just some random person on my friends list, but they said she had PISD, post idol stress disorder.
Yeah.
And I think that's about right.
Yeah.
But the interesting thing was, you know, Aris did the same thing. He was splitting the vote.
Mm-hmm.
So this is something they're genuinely worried about. And I think Tyson said on Twitter today that he could see people had been digging all around where he found the idol. So people were obviously looking for it.
Yeah. Okay. Well, nobody was as lucky as
Tyson. I don't think it's that irrational to be worried about it. But as he's pointed out on the know-it-alls, splitting the vote wouldn't have worked. You didn't have the numbers for the minority.
Okay. And I'm trying to see if there's anything else worth talking about from Twitter. Oh yeah, we had one more tweet. Coach weighs in at @the_real_coach says, is it just me or does @Hayden_Moss remind you of JT on Token Sheens? What do you think? Are you buying that? Does JT remind you, or I'm sorry, does Hayden remind you of JT?
I would say Hayden's been reminding me of JT for a while. Just he's got that sort of type. I think, you know, he's not getting that scene that much, but I think he's playing a really solid game for where he is.
Yeah.
Because he's obviously got good connections with the returners, because he's not played this game before, but he knows what it's like to be a reality person.
Yes.
He's probably met some of them before.
Definitely.
So yeah, I think he's playing a really good social game. I don't really know how he's shaping up with the strategy. Well, I suppose time will tell.
All right. But, well, Sarah, what will be the subject of the individual games blog this weekend?
I don't know, because it's like what we expected to happen happened. So
yeah.
I don't know what I'm going to write about. I mean, I'll write about something. Probably talking about the idol and just how. It'll be talking about Tyson's group and how that's panning out and whether there's any options for the people who are on the outside of the vote, which probably not.
Okay. But,
yeah. Nothing too exciting this week, I don't think, I'm afraid.
Oh, well, that's not much of a plug at all.
I know, it's not. Everybody's probably still reading the last one. That was a long blog. So something shorter, that's a plug.
Yeah.
It will be shorter this week. It'll be easier to read.
Yeah. Maybe you could recast Lost with the survivors.
That seems to be the go-to, doesn't it?
Yeah. No,
I did start off by saying that Vetus reminded me of Benjamin Linus, which I still hold. I don't know why more people aren't putting him in that position.
Yeah. We actually had two of our bloggers. It was like an O. Henry novel. They actually blogged about the same thing, Josh Wigler and Scott Gallagher. They both blogged last week. But if you like Survivor and Lost and you haven't checked that out, you could read that at robhaswebsite.com. All right. So follow Sarah on Twitter at Channon Sarah, CHANNONSARAH, correct?
Yes.
I can pass the Twitter spelling bee. Actually, Twitter spelling bee, I think, might be something. You got to get underscores right. You got to get like if somebody's like a zero instead of an O. What do you think?
Be a future RHAP game then.
Yeah. The Survivor social media spelling bee. Should we make that happen?
Yes.
All right. How about this?
It's not going to be me. Then yes, go ahead and
if I lose the podcast awards, we're doing a 2-hour Survivor social media spelling bee.
Yeah, that'll be easier than the roast.
It's punishment. It's punishment. You guys have to listen to Survivor social media spelling bee. All right. So all right. And do you have a pick to win Survivor? Robs versus Johns.
Robs versus Johns. I thought about this the other day. I did have one, and I cannot remember for the life of me who it was.
All right,
I'll see you. I'll suck up to you then, because I can't remember who my actual pick was. It was you. It was you, definitely you,
Sarah. I was thinking of if they don't actually do it as a season, but all the signs point to that CBS is strongly considering this as one of the seasons. I think that maybe we should find somebody to write it as fan fiction on Rob as a website. Like, I feel like Mario Lanza did with All Star Hawaii and all that stuff. Like, I feel like I think we should hire somebody to write this out as fan fiction.
Well, it can't be me because I've not seen all the seasons with them.
Yeah, well, you're out.
Yeah, this sounds like a good thing. Maybe John Cochran could do it.
Oh,
yeah. He's got the gig, and I'm sure he'd love to return to his roots and write a not-for-profit fanfic.
All right, well, if you're interested in working on the Survivor Robs versus Johns project for the off-season, let me know. And otherwise, we'll see. But the rumor is that's Survivor 30.
That would be an amazing season.
Yeah, that would be exciting.
It would be difficult to get the gender balance right, but it would be an amazing season.
It would be fun. All right, well, Sarah, thank you so much for joining us.
No, thank you for having me.
All right, and check out Sarah's blogs every week. What day of the week do your blogs go up? Is that Saturday or Sunday?
Tuesday. I asked for a later date this time because otherwise I'm just spending all of Thursday and Friday doing them, and it was insane. So yeah. It's now Tuesday, which gives me I'm allowed to take breaks now.
Okay, well, take a break. Thanks for joining us, Sarah, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Okay, thanks. Bye.
All right, take care. All right, everybody, there you have it. That was Sarah Freeman here on Rob Has a Podcast, and another fun show this week. We got to have Penner. We got Sarah Freeman. We got to do some karaoke. Got your voicemails in there. I think that feels like a very good week of Survivor podcasting. So that's not all for the podcasting for this weekend. We are going to pick it right back up and get another podcast to you guys out over the weekend. I'm going to talk to my good friend AJ Mass from ESPN.com. And we are going to go through, as we have every single Survivor and Big Brother season, going back to Survivor South Pacific. Before Cochran even played in his first season, we've been doing this with AJ Mass. We're going to go through the archetypes of casting, the 12 archetypes of the people left in the game. And as we started on Big Brother last season, we'll do our draft of AJ and I will draft teams of six here the rest of the way for Survivor Blood versus Water. So that's going to be a lot of fun. And then I think we're also going to slap on that podcast at the end. We'll get an interview in with the great, you've been asking for him, Primetime Alex Stein. He's back on the grind. You know him from Glass House. You know him from the Worst Cooks in America or something like that on the Cooking Channel. He's back, everybody. This November, check out on CMT. He is going to be one of the guys looking for love on Sweet Home Alabama 4. So we'll talk to Primetime Alex Stein about his latest adventure as well. That's going to be a podcast. I'll post that over the weekend, probably sometime late Saturday afternoon, and give you guys an extra podcast, trying to get some extra shows out for you guys here during the campaign season, as we're trying to win a podcast award. So you guys get to, you guys get some extra content here along the way. So if you want to help us out with your votes all through the weekend and into next week through the 15th, we appreciate your votes at podcastawards.com. And then also, if you still have more time for podcasts, we've got plenty more coming up. Sunday night, we'll talk about The Walking Dead with Josh Wigler, who's one of our great Survivor bloggers on robhasawebsite.com. We're still always trying to figure out when the best time to do those live shows are. I think we're actually going to do them at 11 p.m. Eastern. So if you want to check that out live, or it'll be there when you go to work in the morning on Monday, our Walking Dead podcast. And then this week, we're going to talk Amazing Race on Monday night with Jessica Lease. Of course, that's at 10:15 p.m. Eastern. We're going to talk to Jody Wichneski, I believe is how you pronounce her name. She's going to talk about Amazing Race, and she also works in casting. So we'll talk about some reality TV casting with her as well. And then time to do it all over again. Survivor Know-It-Alls on Wednesday, and then we'll talk to the I'm not sure if we'll have an exit interview this week. It doesn't look like it because there's nobody for Otis to duel. And then we will talk to our big Survivor podcast on Thursday once again. So a lot there. And for you sports fans, check out my podcast every week with T.O. We have a timeout with Terrell Owens. It is a very fun show that I get to do every week. I'm a very lucky guy that I get to go talk football every week with T.O. And what we try to do is we try to talk about sort of the craziest stories in the NFL, all of the wacky stuff that happens. This week we had a really fun guest. I love the show Eastbound and Down. And if you're watching that show this season, they do a very funny thing called Sports Sesh, which is like a takeoff of like a Fox Sports Live type show. And one of the rivals for Kenny Powers this season was this guy, Dontell. And he's played by an actor, Omar Dorsey. He joined us in studio this week to talk about everything. And lots of funny stuff about Richie Incognito. And T.O.'s actually got a pretty interesting take on Richie Incognito as well. So you can hear those podcasts if you go to GetchaPodcastReady.com. G-E-T-C-H-A PodcastReady.com. So if you can get, if you can't get enough of me babbling about nonsense a week, then check out Time Out with T.O. All right. That's going to do it. If you guys made it this far, how about let's, this is like the third week in a row, like we're within like a minute of each other, like that 2-hour and 30-minute mark. So that, I don't know if that's the new normal or what, but that's just, seems to be where we're landing with these podcasts. How about the let's use the hashtag underable. So the made up word that I used earlier in this podcast, and let me know if you made it to the end. I appreciate it. And we'd love to hear from you guys in the comments as well for all the stuff I'm sure that we totally got wrong in the podcast, and anything that you appreciated. We'd love to see it on the comments on robhasawebsite.com. Thank you guys so much for everything. Had a blast once again, and I will talk to you again soon. Take care, everybody. Bye.